broadcasting from the spooky South Coast and around the world on Midnight FM. This is Midnight Society. I am your host, Tim Weisberg. Whether it is the brightest of day or the darkest of night, wherever you may be, it's time to hunker down for the next 3 hours as we enter into a world of wonder and weird that you won't hear anywhere else. And tonight, we're going into the world of Ouija. We're going to be talking with our guest, Karen Dullman, about the Ouija board revealed. And I think a lot of you out there know how I feel about the Ouija board. I don't think it's inherently bad, and I think it's perfectly fine to use, and it's another way to communicate with the other side, and I utilize them on investigations, and I was just talking about them tonight as I was giving a presentation in Middleborough, Massachusetts, the second of two nights, discussing ghost stories, New England ghost stories, with the crowds there, and it was a great event both times. The Alley Theater puts on a fantastic show. They had a nice little set up for me, 6 feet away, actually probably a little bit more than 6 feet away, from all the rest of the tables. Everybody was socially distanced. They were wearing masks. It was very well done and very well handled, all outside under a tent. And so thank you to Lorna for hosting me the last two nights. Last night, some of you may have noticed that we had a replay on. It was our Varla Ventura episode from back in June. That is because our guest G.L. Davies was unable to join us due to technical difficulties that we found out about shortly before the show. So we have rescheduled him. He will be coming back on the program. But last night we ended up running that rerun because, you know, we didn't have much time to scramble to put something together. And there's no way I could have just turned on the microphone and talked for three straight hours. Not after having just talked for three straight hours prior to that. So, and you can probably hear I'm even a little bit hoarse tonight as well. That's all right. A horse is a horse, of course. And the fact that I could still be telling ghost stories in November, you know, we had to postpone it because of the storm was a good feeling. But speaking of postponements, I just want to say to G.L. Davies, if you're listening, we're even now, because the first time he was supposed to be on, I had to postpone it because right before the show, my power went out. And so now this time he had to postpone. So that means that the next time that we have him, either both of us won't be able to go on the air or it'll go off without a hitch. And also, don't forget, tonight after the program, we will have Midnight Drive right here for you on Midnight FM with myself and Amy Martin and Jerry King. I want to make sure I get it right. I tend to screw up their names. We'll all be getting together to talk about the week that was and the week that will be and whatever else is on the table. And then tomorrow night, too, just as a heads up, Spooky South Coast will be live with our guest, Amy Burney. She'll be talking with us about her new book and about some of her new adventures. And then she's also coming on the program in the future here on Midnight Society, too, for those of you who don't listen to Spooky South Coast. So it's going to be a lot of fun stuff to talk about over the next couple of nights and over the next couple of weeks. Just because Halloween is over doesn't mean that the awesome conversation has to be over. And that includes tonight. Karen Dullman is a published author, licensed professional counselor, and Ouija practitioner. She serves as an officer and director of the Talking Board Historical Society. Karen has been using the Ouija board for 47 years and communicates with sentient beings in unseen dimensions. She appears at international events, shows, and on radio sharing her work and research using this tool. Her work's mission is to push the boundaries of consciousness, and her message is to assist humanity in awakening to its greatest potential. And she joins us tonight. Good evening, Karen. How are you?
Good evening, Tim. I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, and I'm glad that we can do a deep dive into Ouija tonight because it comes up a lot with our guests, and everybody's positions are all over the place, but, you know, they really don't necessarily know why they feel the way they do about the Ouija board.
Everybody's positions are all over the board. Pun intended. We can get silly, too, can't we?
Oh, absolutely.
You know, it's such a mysterious tool, such a mysterious device, and even the way it came about into our culture and then society and then how it spread across the world, there's so much mysteriousness about it, and I think people can project their fears, their hopes, their desires, all kinds of things upon it because it doesn't necessarily come with many directions on how to use it, so people get to create how they want to use it, or how they foresee it should be used, or how they want to say don't use it. So yeah, it's an enigmatic device, and there's so many ways to think about this tool that I think it gets people, you know, thinking and creating and just projecting their own thoughts upon it. Without really understanding it, really.
Yeah, normally when I go to the store and I buy a board game from the board game aisle, and when I open it up, there's usually some instructions that I throw away and don't pay attention to. But the Ouija board doesn't come with those.
Well, you know, originally what it did come with was on the back of the board, there was a sticker, a piece of paper, and it basically gave you suggestions for use. They weren't considered rules, like you must do this or it's not going to work for you, or you must do this, or if you don't do this, an evil spirit will come through. It was just suggestions for use, such as place it upon the lap of your partner, male, female preferred. That's how it started. And lightly dust it off with a cloth. Put your fingers on it, and one person try to ask the questions, and just let it see what happens, and let it appear, let the messages appear to you. And there wasn't much to it. And people are thinking, well, wait a second, who am I communicating with when it starts to move? And so there's that whole, you know, thing about, is it my ideomotor, which is my subconscious movements, you know, the muscle movements that are projected upon from my brain onto the planchette, moving it around, so it's a subconscious movement, or is it actually a spirit, or what is it, and is it positive or negative? So all these thoughts, they never said the board is used to communicate with the dead. Well, what happened was, when this tool came out, the spiritualist movement at the time was pretty much in its heyday, you know, grabbed it up and snatched it up and said, hey, we can use this to further our own involvement in communicating with the deceased. And so it became the spiritualist tool. When it was really created, it was created by a group of businessmen and one woman who saw it as a business opportunity. And it worked, but they didn't necessarily say it was spirits that was doing it, or ideomotor, or animal magnetism, or mesmerism. They just said it works. And so when the spiritualist movement grabbed it up, it all of a sudden it became the tool to talk to the dead. And so I know what we're going to talk about tonight. We're going to get into how that shifts and how it's not just a tool to talk to the dead. It could be a tool to talk to many different levels of consciousness. And I know we'll get into that as we progress in our talk tonight, Tim.
Yeah, I mean, I love the fact that it is something that is, like you're saying, open to interpretation, that not everybody's going to use it the same way. You know, I've been using it for years on investigations, and everybody that I've ever sat around with and has never used it before, they always look to me and say, well, how do you use it? And my answer is always, I don't know, whatever really feels right as we're doing it. There's no real, like, right or wrong way, except for, you know, intentionally moving it on your own.
Right. People do push it, too. You're right. you know, and what's happened over the years is what Gene Orlando, one of our founders of the Talking Board Historical Society, created and coined the word Ouija-stitions. People started projecting and creating their own superstitions that were real in their lives, whatever they learned maybe from religiosity, theosophy, philosophies, or just living in life and their cultures. They started projecting those upon the board. And so this became the Ouija-stitions, and that's what kind of developed into the board rules, if you will, ways to use this tool to operate it. But that is not how it started out. So when the board began to, you know, be developed more and more in our country, and it was manufactured at bigger, significant levels, then you started seeing on the back of the box rules, not rules, but suggestions again for engagement, you know, how to maybe use this tool. And that continues on to this day. There's nobody saying this is what you must do. Now, people do create their own talking boards and tell you, these are the must-do rules that you must actually employ in order to get this tool to work, or to use it safely, or however you want to use it. Now, I wrote a book, and my book came out in 2012. It's called The Spirits of the Ouija. When that book came out, people wrote to me immediately and said, this should be the instruction manual that comes with the Ouija board. And I know why they said that, because I talked about it not as rules, but here's some ideas and suggestions that you can utilize to have to, you know, get this tool to work for you in profound ways. And so around that, many people have created their own, again, Ouija-stitions, superstitions, and rules that they think must be used and employed when they use this tool.
Yeah, now, one of the things... Excuse me. One of the things that people have a problem with when it comes to the Ouija board is that it is they feel like you're opening a doorway, opening a pathway, and they're right. You are, but it doesn't mean that you're opening up a negative doorway or a negative pathway.
You know, and that's right. It's really based upon your beliefs. People say intentions, yes. I would say intentions, what you intend, but what's behind your intentions are really what you believe. What we do in life is really based on our beliefs and how we feel about ourselves in the world at large. Do we see ourselves as a pawn to the world? Do we see ourselves as more an empowered individual? Do we see ourselves as having choices and making decisions? And when we start to look at it more on a psychological level, how do we view ourselves in our world? What do we believe about the world at large and how we interact with it? That's what influences our intentions. That's what influences how it works. So a lot of people come to this tool when they've heard this, you know, on the internet nowadays, or it used to be in the movies like Witchboard or some of these older movies that were out in the 50s and 60s. About the Ouija board, or they heard it in different religious circles or cultural circles, and they said, don't use that. That opens portals to negativity. Well, you know what? In life, you can open yourself to anything. Just the way you act with other people, interact with them, you can open up to negativity, you know, or you can open up to positivity. And there's many variations of grayscale in between. Same with this tool. It's really how you want to approach it, what you believe, and how you intend to use it. And that's what you're going to get. So you can get negative information, and maybe it's yourself, your own, you know, your subconscious mind projecting it through the, you know, ideomotor response again. Or maybe it's an energetic field you tapped into that resonates with you at that same level of vibration. I mean, what I've learned about this tool is it's really all about my frequency, my vibration, which is based upon, again, the beliefs I hold, the intentions I hold. And that's really how I dial up, if you will, into the different levels of beings that I communicate with. But now I'm jumping almost into graduate level Ouija. Maybe we're not ready to go there yet. But just when you first start using the Ouija board, you really have to look at yourself. You need to look at what is it you harbor within yourself. What are these thoughts you have about yourself, again, like I said, within your own world and how you work within the world at large, and then go from there. So if you're a very fearful person and you really believe that all these negative things are out there to get you, including people in life, then you're going to attract that to you. So you have to really look at that first, and then from there, you start setting your intentions of what it is you want to do. Now, I know, Tim, you use the board. We've spoken before on a different shows about this, and you mentioned it in your opening that you used it recently and all the stuff that you've done with it. It's like I'm sure you go into it, too, with more of an open mind and also setting intentions.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want, especially because I'm doing it, at like paranormal events where there is guests there that might not be as familiar with the paranormal, I don't want to run the risk of anything bad or negative coming through. So I try and say like, hey, let's not, you know, let's leave all of our fears and preconceived notions about it aside so that doesn't taint the experience. Because I did have one experience one time when these two young ladies and I were using it, and they were terrified of it. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, there was a negative experience that happened as a result of it. But everybody else, I've never had that happen. It's always been something that has been, you know, relatively positive. There's been some other stuff that's happened on the investigations that, you know, using the board might have helped kick that off, but it wasn't the board exclusively that caused those problems.
Exactly. And so one thing I always tell people, too, is I said, the board is neutral. The board does nothing. The board just becomes a simple device which grants me my permission I think I need in order to reach into these realms of the unseen dimensions. And right now we're talking about the deceased, which I like to call the transitioned, because as I've learned from talking to so many deceased people, is that they never really die. They just transform back into another form of a light body, and they never, ever discontinue existing. So it's like life after life after life after life. But so what I found with using this tool, it's really it's the way we go about it. I mean, again, if we're thinking like this is going to be a scary thing, you're going to be more open to attracting that. Now is that because there's scary things out there, or is it because there's scary things within you? And are you projecting that out there, or is it actually like a thought form or a tulpa, or is it actually something out there? I would say it's a little bit of both. And so you really got to kind of fine-tune yourself when you use this tool to think, is how do you want to go about this? What do you really want? And are you going to check your baggage at the door? Like you said, you know, check your fears there and say, I'm going to come to this more with an open mind and more of an energy or effort of exploration and discovery. those, that's the two big words I like to use when I use this tool, and I teach this too when I help people learn to use this tool, is think of it like you're curious and you're out there to explore and discover, whether it's in a paranormal investigation, which I've used the tool before in those regards, or it's just something you want to explore your higher self. And you want to connect with that part of you that's even greater than your corporeal existence. And that's the part of you that connects back to Source, God, the universe, as you may call it. You can use this tool for many ways. But again, it's just the permission that allows us to access the ability. So when I use the tool, I've come to this firm belief that the tool doesn't do it for me. Take the tool away. And as long as I still believe I can do it, I can access the same energies just through my mind, telepathically, kinetically, automatic writing, thoughts, feelings. It's like the biggest tool here that we need to talk about tonight when it comes in regards to the Ouija board is the tool of ourselves, is the tool of our bodies, is the tool of our senses, beyond our physical senses that we have, but going into the six senses, what we may call the clairsenses. And so we have to look at all of that when we use this tool. So it's not the board that does it. It's ourselves that open up into these dimensions. The board just becomes our permission slip.
How was it that you got drawn into utilizing the board?
Well, you know, Tim, this happened for me at such a young age. I was at the age of 8. I wasn't even aware what a Ouija board was. I was definitely into ghosts and spirits. I was seeing already at the age of 2 what people would might call an imaginary playmate. This playmate wasn't imaginary at all. I could totally see it. And I also know it wasn't imaginary. It came back to me just not too many years ago. It came back and appeared again. It was wild. But backtrack, when I was 8 years old, I had 2 girlfriends that lived down the street. They were both sisters. One was my age. She was 8. Her older sister was 2 years old at the age of 10. They brought me to their house. They said, hey, you know, Karen, we're going to play some games today. That was normal. We'd go to each other's house and play board games, Candyland, Pickup Sticks, you know, Operation, all these different games. They said, we have a new game we're going to show you. It's like, okay, cool. So underneath their bed, they pull out this box, and they open it, and there's this board in there. I go, what is that? And they said, well, they called it Ouija, although it's pronounced Ouija. It's a Ouija board. And I said, what do you do with this? And they said, well, you can talk to the dead, is what they said. You can talk to the spirits. I said, oh, come on. You can't. That's not, no. I go, show me. So they put their fingers on the planchette. And the planchette, for people that are listening, is the little indicator, the little mini table that has little feet on it that rolls around or moves around the board. So they put their fingers on it, started moving around. And I thought, this is silly. They started asking questions. It was spelling out letters. We were writing them down. It actually spelled real words, and it was kind of goofy, silly. And then they said, you want to try it? I said, oh, okay, you know, it seems dumb. I'll do it. I said, I'm not pushing, okay? If you guys are, this is the game, you guys push it. I'm not going to do that. And they said, no, please don't. So my hands went on there, and one of the girls had her hands on there with me. It's just 2 of us. And it started moving around. I thought, oh, you're pushing it. She goes, no, I swear I'm not. And it started spelling out things again. It moved right away from me. And then they said, well, let us show you something. I said, okay, what else are you going to show me now? The 2 sisters took back the planchette and were working it together. It started spelling out messages, and it started talking to them as if it was like another person in the room, a little girl, telling them stuff about her life, their life. And I said, who is this? They go, that's our dead sister. I said, you have a dead sister? I never knew. And the older gal, she said, I was a twin. I had a twin at birth. I am a twin. I have a twin at birth that died shortly after birth. And I said, but that doesn't make sense. It's a baby. Turns out her sister was growing up on the other side in the afterlife. And the little girl was also spirit, was 10 years old as the other girl in the room. That blew me away more than just the fact we could talk to spirits, because I was already interested and I believed that that was possible. I just didn't know you could do it through a board. But what shocked me was this little girl that died like before the age of 1 was growing up and was also now a 10-year-old talking to them. I found that super fascinating. I ran home, told my parents, and they said, sure. I said, no, it's true. Not only do the dead exist, they even communicate with them, I said, but there's proof, and they grow up on the other side. And my parents were like, yeah, wink, wink, sure, yeah. And I said, but you can do this through the Ouija board. And they said, oh, yeah, I think we had a Ouija board when we were young. And they kind of laughed at it. I said, well, okay, if you're not going to take me seriously, I know Santa Claus will, and I'll ask him for one for Christmas. So, Tim, sure enough, that Christmas, December 25th, Christmas Day, under the tree was a beautiful new Ouija board for me, and the rest is history for me in my odyssey with it.
So then, sorry, I don't mean to keep clearing my throat. I should pot down when I do that. You get it and you start utilizing it. And, you know, one of those Ouija sessions is that you shouldn't use the board on your own. Were you using it on your own?
Well, this is what, okay, so my board was a circa 1972 Parker Brothers board. I got it in 73. On the back of the board, it had the suggestions for using it. And it said, at that time it still said, it's better to use preferably male-female. So I employed one of my younger brothers and said, you're going to do the board with me. And so we started using it. It worked somewhat for us. He was a little too young. He was a few years younger than me. So here I am, 8. He's like 5'5", and he understood what kind of what he's doing, but it didn't work that well. I said, okay, I'm going to skip the rules, what they call the ideas for or suggestions for employment. And I thought, I'm going to start asking my friends, which were mostly little girls, and I had some guy friends too. And they started using it with me, and it was more, nobody was serious enough with it really. It was a few people that were, but we would ask silly little questions, but we always got, it was always positive, and we started talking to what you would call, again, the deceased, I call the transitioned, and different spirits started coming through, and, you know, I think at that time, and I can ask my parents, even to this day, they thought it was just all a game. They didn't think I was really doing it. They thought we were pushing it, all these things, but what I began to find out through the years of 9, 10, 11, 12, a lot of my girlfriends that would come over for slumber parties, several of them, their parents would say, you can stay at Karen Dahlman's house, but we don't want you doing the Ouija board. Now, in my home, there was nothing wrong with using a Ouija board. I mean, in the case of me, I mean, we were practicing Catholics. I could easily go to church, CCD, and come home and use my Ouija board. There was no weirdness or it was bad about it. It was like, this is just another aspect of what I like to do, and this is another aspect of my life over here. It was kind of compartmentalized, but yet, to me, in my mind, it went hand in hand because they're talking about spirits or guardian angels or people speaking in tongues or getting the burning bush speaking to them or hearing spirits through the Bible. And when I was learning at church, I was like, okay, well, I'm just doing it here as well. It's a continuation for me. It all really made sense. But to me, I was dumbfounded and gobsmacked why these children, my friends, would say their parents said they couldn't use it. So, Tim, what I would do, I thought, we're going to do something paranormal here. So we would play light as a feather, stiff as a board instead. We're going to do something to be able to start accessing these realms. And I didn't use the terms then, but I said, we've got to explore what's out there. I mean, and sometimes we ended up scared, but we were always mesmerized by that game, light as a feather, stiff as a board. Because we would have these incredible results of how we could lift a body, person laying there with just a few fingers, and it would lift up, above our heads and put them back down. So we knew something was there.
Above your head.
Didn't care if we played that. But that's something I would still play if we couldn't use the Ouija board.
I'm going to just hold you right there because we're up against the break, but I also want to react up against your heads. That's pretty incredible.
Oh, amazing.
All right, well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back on the other side, we'll continue talking about the world of Ouija with Karen Dahlman during the break. If you want to find out more about her or about her work, you can go to midnight.fm, and when you go there, you'll find the page that we made for her, and you'll be able to pick up her books and follow her on social media and all that. It's all right there for you. During the program, if you have any questions, you can email them to me, tim@midnight.fm. You can put them in the Midnight Society Facebook group. You can put them on Twitter, #MidnightFM, or you can put them in the Discord server if you're a member over there. And we will be back in just a few moments with more Midnight Society here on Midnight FM.
listening to Midnight Society with Tim Weisberg on Midnight FM.
And we are back. Tonight we're talking with Karen Dahlman about the world of Ouija, and we're just getting into some of her early experiences with it. And before the break, Karen, you were telling us about when you started utilizing it with your siblings and, you know, actually really starting to get into some of the early work that you did with the board.
Yeah, and so I was saying that when we couldn't use the board, then I was always trying something else. It was always something else spooky I was going to do, such as light as a feather, stiff as a board. And people out there don't know what this is. What I've learned as an adult, it's actually a hypnotic technique where you have one of the people laying flat, and somebody sits at their temples, at their head, and rubs their temples, and they tell a story. And the story is to tell them that they died. You give this whole long story. It takes them to their death. And as soon as they're like dead, you say, light as a feather, stiff as a board. And all the other people are around the person, and they put like usually one or two fingers under their body, and then you lift them up. And we were able, you sit cross-legged typically, you know, if you're with your legs, that kind of style, or knees. Usually cross-legged is more comfortable. And we were able to get them up at least 2 feet, which is right to our heads. It was amazing. So that was something I worked with a lot when people didn't want to use the board, because I felt like, I didn't realize at the time, but I knew there was so much more out there, because I was also starting to see things myself. Weird lights in the sky, visitors at night, which later on I began to realize these are called the guardians, or type of spirit being, almost like angels. I also had my little imaginary playmate that wasn't imaginary. So to me, I knew there was so much more out there, and I wanted to explore it. And not knowing I was tapping into hypnosis, I mean, I realized that later when I actually became a hypnotherapist as part of my practice as a therapist, I started exploring these things more. But those younger years of just using the Ouija board, realizing there's so much more out there and you could tap into it, just really took me on this incredible odyssey that lasted throughout my life. And here I am 47 years later, still using this device, but in such different ways than maybe how I started.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people that utilize it for the first time, you know, they're not really taking it seriously. They're mm-hmm. just looking for, you know, whether it be, you know, using it as a party game or utilizing it to try to freak themselves out or whatever. And so a lot of people use it when they're younger. It either doesn't work or they have a weird experience with it, and then they don't go back to it. And they never really give it another thought. You know, they tried it out, and that's kind of the you know, one and done kind of mentality.
Yeah, and you know what? And that's okay, too, because it's not for everybody. I mean, it really can be a serious tool. We'll get into that more, and it really can be a very sacred tool, actually, and can take you into some really incredible places to explore. But I will say this. Most people that write to me and say, yeah, I tried it as a kid, and we got spooked out, like you just said, or this is the big one, Tim. They'll say, we used it when we were teenagers, and we were drinking at a party, or in college, we were drinking. That's the combination. Those kind of spirits don't mix with the kind of spirits you want to meet. Wow. So it's best not to mix your spirits, but that's just the people's experience. That they're joking around, it's a jovial nature, they're drinking, they're just being silly, nobody's taking it seriously. They're saying, you know, when am I going to die kind of questions, and just, oh, who's there, anybody there? And so they get either spooked out, or it doesn't work that well, or just some stupid, or it's shocking. And that's that people write to me and say, this is where I am with it. How do I go to this next level? And so that's just where everybody starts. You know, that's usually people's experience until they see that there's something to it that you can use on different levels.
And I think that the other part of it, that when people first start trying it out and start figuring it out, they are unnerved by the fact that it does move, and then they start second-guessing, like, did I do it? Did I move mm-hmm. it? And they don't really understand all the ins and outs of how it works.
Yeah, and it, you guys, it does move. I'm here to tell everybody that the planchette can move. Some people, it doesn't move at all. I think they're just kind of stuck, and they're just not going to allow that movement because it's so subtle. It's such a, and Tim, you know this, it's such a, I call it ever so so little subtle movement. It's so minute at first. You've got to really feel it, and then you got to follow it. It pulls you along, and in the beginnings, for me, it's such a long time ago, but I ask everybody that I work with now, everybody, every time I get a new partner or somebody new tries it with me, I say, describe what you're feeling, and I would say across the board, what they're basically saying is it like it pulls, I follow it, but it's so subtle, and I'm shaky at first, and I'm thinking, I'm questioning, is Karen pushing it or am I pushing it? And, of course, I'm not going to ever push it unless I'm training somebody. Then I'll say, I'm pushing it right now or I'm pulling it so you can feel what it feels like. But other than that, it's like they say, yeah, and I'm questioning myself. And it's hard. It's hard to get in the groove and even let go and imagine this thing could work of its own volition, although it is working through your energy. So let's be clear here. I've never seen a planchette myself just move on its own. I know people have told me they have, and I'm not going to discount that. There's strange things out there and things do happen. But for me, I've never seen it move on its own, but with our fingers on it, which is the lightest touch. I use one finger now, Tim. That's all I use. If you watch my videos, I use one finger. My partner might use now 3 or 4 fingers, and it goes really fast. We just follow it. But it's so subtle. It's hard to wrap your mind around it at first and even believe that it can do this outside of you, beyond you, although, yes, your energy helps contribute to it, but you're not pushing it. The idea is you don't push it. You follow it. You flow with it, and it actually tugs. It's a little bit of a tug, too. It's an incredible sensation if you haven't used one before, and then you just kind of have to follow it. Now, speaking about that, we're mostly talking about using it with a partner, and, you know, Tim, a lot of people ask, can you use it alone? And what are your thoughts on that, Tim?
I've never tried it alone. I would think that it might not be a good idea from the perspective of, you know, if you're looking to prove something with it, then you want to have somebody else there to document it and be part of it. But if you're utilizing it, like I know you utilize it, just as a tool to reach out and to get answers to questions and to, you know, to look at the bigger picture of things, I think it's okay. I don't know why people are so afraid to use it on their own.
Yeah, but I will say this. I agree with everything you said. I will say this. It's harder for people to use it on their own. I know some people that have been able to use it on their own almost relatively quickly. That's rare. Very, very rare. People write to me all the time and say, I'm trying to use it on my own. What can you suggest? Now, I have a lot of suggestions because I can use it on my own, too. I will say this. It doesn't work as well as when I use it with a person. Why is that? Because I'm blocking it mentally, because I really enjoy using it with a partner. But using it by yourself, you can do that. I don't always recommend it for people, and not for any spooky, scary reasons. I say that because it's going to be difficult. I also say to younger people, like children and teenagers, I say don't really use it on your own. I would try to use it with somebody so you could have some other kind of objective opinion when you get answers or it starts moving. And you don't. I also hate when people rely on this tool to try to get all their answers from it because, you know, a true spirit guide, a true helper, a true loved one is not going to live your life for you, and they're not going to tell you what to do every second of every moment. Wear this today, go here today, call so-and-so today. But I know people who would do that. And so I do write in one of my books, I kind of say I hesitate that you use it on your own in the beginning just for those reasons. But you can use it alone, and it's just going to – you got to learn what that subtle feeling feels like. So I always say sit down with one person if you can. And most people say, oh, I have nobody around me. My family doesn't like it. My friends don't like it. I have nobody to do it with. Well, someday you will have somebody you can do it with. I know meetup groups who actually use the board as one of their tools. There's so many groups out there that use the board now for different things. But if you can find one person to use it with and see what it feels like when it moves, what that really that sensation is, you're going to notice it better when you go back to using the planchette by yourself. So Tim, I went 39 years using it only with a partner. It's only been in these last several years that I started using it by myself. Why? Because, again, I said it was my own mental block, and I really didn't want to use it on my own just because I liked it better with a partner. I felt like it just was so much more energy. It worked so well. I kind of was old school. I went by the suggestions on the back of my box, male, female, or two people, and it just worked better. Now, I've also used it with several people on the planchette. I've gone with as many as 4 people. And the 4 people I used it with, they were all women, and they were all very talented using the board already either by themselves or with another partner. And so I knew it could work really well because these ladies were already used to that movement, what it feels like, and just going with it. And it worked really nicely for us. But that's even hard, too. So I suggest if you're going to start using it, anybody out there listening and is interested in using the tool, I would say start with a partner if you can, just because you're going to get better results at first. Not too many energies of fluence in it, just you and a partner. And I do talk a lot about picking your partner. Sometimes you don't have, you just use it with somebody who's interested. But when you really get down to getting into using this tool and the ways that I'll talk about in a little bit, the positive ways using it, it's nice when you have a partner who's also kind of on a similar spiritual path that you might be on, who's also very open-minded as you might be, and who's just interested in, and not scared, not fearful, but is really interested in opening up their own abilities. And then things take off. It's amazing.
So, you know, being on a similar path like that, I mean, they might not be somebody that's looking to utilize the board, though, either. You don't have to have somebody that's just as much into the idea as you are. You could bring somebody into that and introduce them to it.
Absolutely. That happens all the time. I teach courses when I go to these different speaking engagements. I'll teach people how to use the tool, and it's, and you just might just be a curiosity. But because their curiosity overwhelms any fear they have, it's so much stronger, that's all you need. Again, so going back to that curiosity for exploration and discovery, and that's all you really need to get this tool to work. And then what's easiest to communicate with is typically deceased people, the transition people, the ones that are closest to us over the other side of the veil, basically, which would be your loved ones, friends, family, might be, you know, a grandparent, somebody, or it could even be, we'll go as far as saying even a spirit guide, that kind of thing. Those are usually easiest to reach at first, and that's always what I say to start. Start by asking for your guide or for a transitioned loved one who would come back and care so much for you. But yeah, that's it. You just, if you have a curiosity, that's what's going to allow you to start. If you want to start getting into your higher self and getting into these other dimensional beings, and some of them are really high frequency, it's good to have more of like a drive that says, I'm really empowered within myself. I am a light being myself. I know that I'm not just stuck in this corporeal existence. I will live forever. Then you start reaching these other beings that have such a high vibration that it's harder for them to come down to just being such a human nature, a corporeal physical being. You have to kind of raise your consciousness to reach them. And so that's when you start getting into, you know, developing your own abilities, developing your skills, developing your spirituality, developing ways to ground yourself, center yourself, to feel empowered. A lot of these things help contribute to some of the great success with using this tool.
So when you say higher being, are you talking about something like what people would refer to as angels?
Absolutely. That's one level, sure. You can talk to angelic beings. You can talk to, I would say start with your higher self, but then you'll go into different dimensions. So let me say this. So when I was using a lot, and I brought it to college, back to my sorority, and we started using it all the time there. And we tapped into one of our sorority sisters who was, before I was there, but she had died. She had died, and we thought, let's tap into one of our sisters, sorority sisters, who is deceased, and she sure enough came through. And we started work with her, and she would tell us all these stories. I didn't know this woman, and most of us were younger classmen, and she was a few years ahead of us. And she came through and was telling us all these stories and talking about other alumni that we started reaching out to and saying, I got a message for you. And they go, how do you know this? I said, well, so-and-so told us this. She's like, there's no way. That's a private story. I said, well, she wanted me to tell you so you would believe this. So we started getting all these messages, and it was really interesting, and it was very entertaining, to say the least, and fun. But from that, I realized if we can make such a solid connection and get information we have no association to or relationship to, other than we both are sorority sisters at some level, although she's like 6 years older than me, I started realizing there's so much more to consciousness. There's so much more. So how am I able to tap into that? I know it's not the tool. It's myself and my partner, and we're making this tap. So there's something else going on. And I started at that point, I went to graduate school, started becoming a psychotherapist, and really got into exploring like hypnosis I was mentioning earlier, and these other kinds of mind way you could alter your mind and you know, even start doing out-of-body experiences and telepathic things, or kinesthetic stuff, the things that you could do, psychokinesis, things like that. And so I started thinking, well, why don't I just tap into that part of me that is the wise part of me? We might call that our greater self. We might call it our higher self. We might call it our oversoul self. But it might call it even our mental self. But it's that part of me that's actually, I've always heard this term, beyond just me and my physical existence. And so when I started reaching that started communicating, making that connection, and my higher self came back, and I knew it was me talking to me, but a greater part of me had a better overall picture, like a bird's eye view, is like the GPS to my life. That's when we started making these connections that went beyond. Once we raised our frequency, meaning our intentions, our energies, our thoughts, which automatically raised our vibration, which we'll just call frequency, to a greater level to tap into that, we started affecting great change in our life. We started feeling even more empowered. We started getting new insights. We started having incredible dreams. And it was just a group of three of us, two of my friends and myself, and this was 1989 for the next 4 years through 1993. We made that our intention to get together weekly or biweekly, sometimes twice a week, and talk to our higher selves. Now, what happened when we did this was that not only would my higher self talk to me, my higher self might have insight for my friends there, or their higher self might have insight for me or my higher self. So it was almost like group therapy now. We had the three higher selves there with the three people, and it just became this incredible way of just getting insight into our life. We were young professionals. I was a therapist. They were also a type of therapist working in the world and really just trying to make our way. We're all like in our late 20s. Now, what happened during this time, this will get into the angels now, we started getting other communications coming through. The communications we got, all of a sudden the angelic realm came through. Extraterrestrials came through. I'm not talking about deceased extraterrestrials. I'm talking about extraterrestrials that exist. Also some that have died but came back. And when I say extraterrestrials, I'm not saying like they have to look like grays. Some of them describe themselves looking more like we look, and they came from different planets. One mentioned Maldek to us. I had all these transcripts from that time, and I got to tell you now, here we are, 1990-ish, 91, 92, and this information is coming through. The internet was in its infancy. I think we had AOL dial-up at that time. We didn't have all these social media abilities to tap in and talk to people, or this ability to get on Google and research. You have to go to your library and read this stuff. But I just tucked this stuff away, not knowing what it all meant. And it kind of was like, is this for real? What's going on here? So I kind of put it away. And that came back in a big way later on in my life. But what happened after we started talking to them, the angels came through. Anybody that came to my session, one of my angels would come through and introduce them to their own angels. So they'd get their own angel names or angel energy, and then we'd give them insight as well. Now, Tim, now this is what really blew me away. This is when it really took off for me. Not that that wasn't taking off enough. One day, I was working it with one of my partners. We were sitting down at a table, working the planchette on the Ouija board, spelling out. I remember specifically my angel, her name's Angel Mary, was speaking to us. And she was telling us stuff. And all of a sudden, she said, "You're not going to believe this. Who wants to talk to you?" I said, "Okay, well, I'm sure I will. We talk to all kinds of different beings now. Go ahead." She goes, "Okay, well, you're not going to believe this, but hold on a second." So that's what she spelled out. The energy left. The planchette started going in a different direction, a little bit slower. The feeling of the planchette, by the way, I feel the energy when it comes through, and every single spirit that comes through has a different, I call it a spirit signatures, almost like fingerprints. Each one's unique. And it might be the way the planchette moves, the patterns it makes, where it enters the board, or the how quick it moves, or the staccato, how it might go tup-tup-tup fast or really smooth. But at this time, this one changed and went a different direction slowly. And then what came through, it spelled out, "Hermes Cat, I love you." I said, "Wait a second." I had a cat sitting right there. It's a big, fat pumpkin cat, I used to call it. It was a cat that was orange, and I called him Hermes the Cat. He was sitting there very much alive, not dead, not transitioned, very much alive, sitting in a chair just looking at us. Loved to sit in that chair. We used the Ouija board. And I said, "Mary Angel, what's going on?" And she goes, "Yes, it's true. You can communicate with the animals." I said, "But this animal's not dead." She goes, "No. You can communicate with the consciousness of animals that are alive." Mm-hmm. And I said, "Well, how could this work? You know, my cat doesn't talk. It doesn't have like English language, you know, that speaks." She goes, "No. What happens is we do the translation. So we work with their energy. We read the vibration of what their feelings are, their thoughts are. We get those images and put it into the best translation we can, which is pretty darn close. And then we relay that back to you through the board." I said, "That's just freaking amazing." And I got to tell you, when that happened, things changed exponentially. The direction and the trajectory of my work with the board significantly changed at that point.
Just as an aside, Does the cat understand when you talk to it directly, or do you also need to translate when you want to express
them? Absolutely. We'll do the board, and now, and as a matter of fact, I was telling the story, one of my cats just came over to sit on my lap, and he talks to me all the time on the board. So what happens is they want to communicate with me, and they say, Lexley, we talked to you already, which is true. If people have pets, and you love your pets, what happens is you feel them, right? You can feel, it might be you think, oh, it's the way they look at me, or they come over to me, but yet there's another understanding you have that a lot of us don't comprehend until we really spend time with it. And you start getting images and feelings, and they're not yours. It belongs to the cat or your dog or your pet or even wild animals. They project onto you, and you start to feel it, and you translate that. So the animals always say to me, well, this is kind of silly because you know we communicate with you already. But they will entertain it, and many of them. I've written about some of the conversations I've had with my pets in one of my books, but they will come through, and then what happens is they get a translator, too, that translates it back to English. But they talk to me all the time, and in fact, the cat that is in my life now, he's a white cat, and he adopted me, it's been 7 years ago, and he came to my back door, kept coming back for a couple of months, and I finally, brought him in and was going to take him to a no-kill shelter so he can get adopted out. I already had two cats, but I just fell in love with him, and my other cats were good with him, and so I decided to keep him. I didn't know his name. Well, first of all, nobody claimed him. I didn't steal him off the streets. Nobody. I tried to find his owner for like a while, like about a good month, and then I decided to keep him. And he loved to also, the same thing, loved to watch us or sit there when we use the Ouija board. And I got to tell you, Tim, a lot of people write to me and say when they use the Ouija board, their cats or dogs love it. They want to either sit on it or be near them when they use it. And I think it's because we shift our energy and we're in a great space mentally, physically, spiritually when we use this tool. And they just love being around that energy. It's like they know, animals know people, and they can read them really well because they feed off our energy. So anyway, I was with one of my board partners. We're sitting at the table, and this white cat was sitting there on the floor. I didn't have a name for him yet, and I wasn't even asking him his name, but we were talking again to, I think at that time it was the guides, who I just call the guides now, and all of a sudden it broke, this a whole new movement on the planchette broke through and said, I like the name Bear. And I looked at my friend Rhonda, and I said, what? Is this the cat? And the cat's sitting there looking at us again from the floor, just looking up at us. And I said, okay, so you want to be called the name Bear? And he said, yes, I like that name. I said, what was your original name? He says, George. I don't like that name. I said, okay, your name is Bear. So that cat actually named himself through the use of this tool. It can happen.
Well, I wonder if, there isn't a way that we could have... like really I'm sure you're probably doing this, but like really get into some of the deeper conversations that the animals can have with us. More than just, do I do a good job taking care of you? Do you like this food? I mean, what kind of things have you heard from the pets?
Oh my gosh. It's very emotional. It's so touching. It's so lovely. So I work with, when I do sessions for people or we do shows, a lot of people want to talk to their deceased animals because they tend to go to the deceased right away. It's the first thing people want to do. We will communicate with their animals in a transition. They may come through directly or a representative will speak on their behalf. And there's a representative now that comes through my collective who represents the animals and comes through all the time if the animals aren't able to communicate right away. But what I've learned is the gist of this. Basically, our animals are really our master teachers and master healers. They are not here just by circumstance or happenstance. They're not here because of just you think it's by luck or chance. It's not because we rescue them. The truth is they've always rescued us, whether we choose them or they choose us. This cat chose me, but yet I chose to bring him into my life. And even the cats that I think I rescued, they came to my life because they really, truly wanted to rescue me. So something to think about here. The animals come in to teach us about unconditional love. Now, I learned all this from them telling me this, whether they're here in physical form or a lot of them, when they transition, have this more, I'll call it, sage-like approach to life, and they speak like a depth. They really speak like they know it, like seers, like Buddhas. And they have this such wisdom to them. And they say, we're back to the self that I was before I came to this world, before I chose to come and help you. They said, I know you. We let you believe that you're rescuing us, And yes, we go out there and help animals that might be abused and all that stuff. But the reason why they will gladly allow these things to hurt, to happen to them, so they can be rescued. And the right person will come along and get that animal that needs whatever lesson that animal helped them with. Uh-huh. And that's what they're really here to do. And so yes, we get some very profound messages. One of my cats is alive.
I'm just going to hold you right there, Karen, just because we're up against the break. But we'll grab that on the other side. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more Midnight Society in just a moment here on Midnight FM.
Listening to Midnight Society with Tim Weisberg on Midnight FM.
And welcome back. We are talking tonight about the world of Ouija with our guest Karen Dahlman. During the break, somebody was trying to call in on the studio phone line. I don't have a television in the studio here, so I have CNN running on my iPad. So I can keep taking a look over there and seeing if the totals have changed on the election, just so I can keep up with that. And so I haven't been able to answer any phone calls on the iPad, but maybe later on we can open up the phone lines. But for right now, if you have a question that you'd like to submit, tim@midnight.fm, post it in the Midnight Society Facebook group, put it on Twitter, #MidnightFM, or you can put it in the Discord server if you're a member over there. But later on, we can probably open up the phone lines. I like to wait anyway to take the phone calls until we've had a chance to talk about a bulk of the things that we want to discuss so that we don't run out of time. I mean, that's what we want to do. We want to, as much as, you know, you look at it and you say 3 hours, you can cover a lot. Time flies, and it's certainly flying tonight as we were talking with Karen. So, Karen, right before the break, I didn't mean to cut you off, but these breaks are all automatic. You were talking about the cat that you had a kind of like a next-level communication experience.
Oh yeah, I have them all the time, and so that happened in that was actually January 26, 1996, my very first animal communication via the board, and actually my very first where I was conscious of an animal communication. Since then, the animals have taught me a lot. I've had a lot of cats that have died, or a lot of pets that have died, but when they're alive, they teach me so much. In fact, one of my pets that transitioned about 2.5 years ago, it was a black cat named Panzer, and a lot of people that follow me know Panzer because he's in one of my books. He's very vocal. He's hysterical. He has a great sense of humor. When he was alive and after transitioning, he still has that humor. But what he used to do when I was be on radio shows like this, when he heard me on the microphone or saw me on the microphone, he would automatically stand in the background and just start meowing super loud. He's been heard on like Coast to Coast, many shows I've been on. He's been heard on my YouTube channel, and everybody said they've kind of found love with. He had a little following with Panzer. So when Panzer transitioned, I was really torn up. It was like when you lose somebody you love so much, and the animals are just like people to a lot of us. And actually they are. They have a soul, and they also move on, and they transition, and they get to reincarnate just like human beings do. That's a whole different topic, though. So I just couldn't talk to him right away. I just needed a little space and time. I was taking it, and I kept getting this urge. I was trying to go shopping. It was like about a week later. I was trying to go to the store, get some food, do some stuff, and I kept getting this urge. And it was, I know it was him trying to communicate with me, do a show. create a YouTube show, do a show, talk to them about me, talk to them about what I'm doing for you, all these things. And so I sat down at the board with my partner, and I got a whole slew of messages to give to people. And it was all about when animals transition and how they're here to help us. And basically one of the things he said that just almost brings me to tears, and it's very emotional to talk about, he said, I was there helping you through your life. But when I needed you the most, you were there to help me transition. I had to put him down. He had terrible stomach cancer. He was in great pain, and I had to put him down. It was the most horrible decision. I know all the people out there that make this decision for their pets. I want you to know, and this is what I'm learning about these animals, that there's a time for them to go, and they have a shorter lifespan, and that's because they heal us in so many great ways, but they rely on us to make those decisions because they can't make those themselves quite often, and they're very thankful. But what happened was, he goes, do it. I can hear him in my mind, because I can communicate with animals now just telepathically, not all the time, but quite often I can if I sit with a pet or something. And so I created this YouTube video, and it was really tough for me to do, to get through it. I'm crying. I got to stop it. I kept through the crying. I tried to pull most of the crying part out. It was just so emotional. And he's like, see, and he said to me afterwards, he goes, see, I'm going to help more people now in my passing than I did when I was alive. So he was talking to help the people by screaming in the background during my radio shows and the shows I was on, which he was. He brought a lot of humor to the show, and I always would talk about him. But then when I did this video, and it's if you want to see it, it's called When Pets Transition, and it's on my YouTube channel under Karen A. Dahlman. I get so many people comment on it, and you can read the comments, or they'll reach out to me and say, exactly what I need to hear. Oh my gosh. Because I was feeling badly or challenged or feel like I didn't do enough or I wasn't there or I had to make this horrible decision. And it's like, no, the animals rely on us to make these decisions for them. But up to that point, we don't realize how much we rely on them. And this is some of the most incredible unconditional love that we could ever have, because humans come with all these conditions and thoughts and beliefs and overthinking, all these things we put into our head. We just cram it with like all this monkey chatter. Where the animals are kind of like, I'm in the moment. I live in the moment. I'm not going to hold it against you if this happened to me in my past. And even when people abuse animals, they kind of almost come back. It's like it's horrible. But we judge it from our opinion. But for them, they're like, we are here to love you. We're going to love you no matter what. And that's what they do. And they go, we just rely on you at our end. We rely on you. We need that extra help. But we're really here to help you. And so Panzer was so proud of himself. But one of my cats, too, is also working on some books. He's been writing it. He's been writing it for a few years now when he was alive. And he's still writing it, telling me to, when he's deceased, transitioned. So I bring up the animals, and I wanted to say, I can't even say enough about the animals, and I've spoken to so many different kinds. It's just that I want everybody to understand that they really have a place in our life beyond just we think we're taking care of them. They're really taking care of us. So think about what your animal might represent to yourself and how they've helped you through some of your own challenges. And they're so proud of it that they can do that for us. And it's such a beautiful relationship to share.
And all the pets have that level of consciousness?
Every single pet does. Every single animal we bring, and even the wild ones we bring into our homes, we might help. A wounded bird or something, or even the wild animals. I mean, it could be a cow, a horse, a goat, a chicken. They all have a level of consciousness, but the way they communicate really depends on how close they are to humanity to have that ability or desire to communicate. Because some of the more wild animals don't really have that desire, don't really need to. And a lot of them want to be left alone. But yet, if you can get, this is what I was talking about earlier, changing your frequency and your vibration through your thoughts, through your beliefs and your intentions, and through taking this as a serious tool and a sacred tool that you're really trying to reach out to consciousness beyond your own, you'll start being able to tap into these other kinds of consciousness. I mean, it doesn't just stop there. I mean, I was able to get to the animal kingdom after I got to these higher beings of light energy. They'd never been born in a physical body. People might call them guides. I call them ethereal beings. They're light beings. They're an extension of source wisdom, of source energy. They're a light being that's always wrapped in love. They only know love. Although they understand our consciousness and they understand that what humanity thinks about the dichotomies or, you know, good, bad, up, down, they understand that dualistic nature we live within, but they don't. They live in nothing but pure love, which contains the light and dark within it. They understand the level of contrast and how that's needed to understand love. And so they read vibration. And they came to me 2 years before the animals started coming in. It's like you just start working up your energy level, and what happens is this, Tim, the possibilities for connection, the possibilities, again, for exploration and discovery start to increase and move out exponentially. So you start to believe and know you can tap into all different levels of consciousness that's out there. Something that's sentient, some type of sentience, you can tap into it. And I'm not saying it has to be a sentience that we understand. You may not understand how to communicate with that sentience, but eventually you'll make connection if you keep that as your goal and you keep your focus there. That's how you dial your frequency. That's how you tune into these different beings. And what I always call, kind of jokingly, I say my Ouija board, or even myself, is the great cosmic phone. I just channel. It's no different than channeling, no different than doing psychic work, mediumship, voice channeling, any of these gifts that people do. I'm just happen to use a tool when I do them. And so it's just a matter of me shifting my view, shifting my intentions, my beliefs, my desires, and then I can reach that different dimension. And it may take a few times at it to finally make that tap, but I'm at a point now where I've been doing this for such a long time, it's very easy for me to tap into many different consciousness, as long as it's sentient beings.
So what is probably the most astounding fact that you have learned from communicating with one of these beings?
Well, I have to say, it has to be from the guides. This is a collective group of beings. I just mentioned two of them. I call them two of them that are in there. It's actually a whole group. There's a plethora of them in there. It's almost like my pantheon of guides. It's the messages that come through are so profound. It's life-affirming, and it changes my life. It gives me guidance and wisdom on certain insights. It's like they come forward to give, I would say, humanity lessons in life or inspiration from the ages. It's like nothing new under the sun, but it's in a way of saying it for our era of living, but these are all ancient universal truths. So we do sessions for people. I'm always doing readings. I'm doing shows all the time where people get to ask their questions, and I don't know anything about these people. I might not even know the person at all. I don't have to know anything, because the guides will talk to these people directly. They'll ask questions, and the guides will answer them and talk to them about their life, the direction they're going, and they'll give some specifics, or they'll say, or ask them a question back to make them think. And that, to me, is so profound. They don't come forward and say, we think you should go call this person because this job's waiting for you. Instead, they might say, there was a phone call you made the other day, and I believe that there's some great insight to be gained from that. What came to your mind when you made that phone call? And they ask you questions back, so it becomes like the Socratic method they use to help you dig deeper into your life. They're very therapeutic, and I know why I attracted them to me, because I am a psychotherapist. That was what I was trained as, and I worked as for a decade in private practice when I was younger, and that's why I attracted this kind of caliber or level of this energy, because they work. Well, they're saying right now, I can hear them in my mind, they're saying, we work so well together, and we were there with you when you were doing your therapy before we even appeared to you through the board. You were just ready at that point to accept it. So there's such profound things like that when they work with people and give them great insight into their life, and somebody will walk away and say, come back to me later and said, oh, now I know what that meant, or this changed me. It's those kinds of things that I just relish and cherish. And I get that all the time in my life. There's so many personal, private things that I am able to communicate with them about. But again, a true spirit guide, and I call them the guides, they'll never try to live your life. And in fact, they want me to emphasize this right now, is that when you meet a spirit guide or even your angels, they're going to be most likely your cheerleader. They'll stand on the sidelines and be your greatest support, they will be there for you, and they'll give you signs and symbols, and that's what angels do mostly, where the guides will come through and literally tell you these things and give you, and they may say, do you remember that time that 10 years ago when you were swimming in that lake and you were with your friend and you had this great epiphany or something like that, and you're like, wait, I haven't thought about that in a decade. They're like, bingo, what did you learn from that? And then you have to kind of apply it yourself. And they don't just hand it to you because they do. It's like interfering with our free will. They're very respectful of that. But they're here to help us. And what I do is not unique. Maybe it's unique the way I do it. But many people are already tapping into this type of guidance. And they just do it. They might use a board, but many people do it in different ways. I have some people writing to me and saying, that makes sense. I do it through oracle cards, or I do it just through automatic writing, or I do it through my meditations, or I do it through my dreams. And so one of the really cool things that I've learned from all this work, I've done all these different sentient beings and communicating with them, from the deceased, the transition, to the animals, to the extraterrestrials, the interdimensionals, the angelic kingdom, and goes on. The list goes on and on. I just want to say it goes on and on up to the guides. It's like I've learned that you can even develop your own abilities even more. When you start having these experiences and see that it's very real for yourself, you start opening up inside of you all these clairsenses I was talking about before. You start becoming more empathic, more intuitive. Your dreams, you become more lucid in your dreams. You start getting hits in your dreams that help you with things in your life. I write books for my dreams. I will wake up in the middle of the night, and all of a sudden I feel like I have to write some stuff down, and I just trust it nowadays. I write, go to bed, turn the light back off. I know exactly what I wrote. I get up and I go, I wrote that? I remember saying that. I mean, Tim, I will go back and read parts of my third book, which is the Spirit of Alchemy, Secret Teachings of the Sacred Reunion. When I read that book, I go, I don't even remember writing that. And that's because I channeled a lot of it, whether it was through my dreams on the board or in telepathically or through meditations. And I would just come out of it and just write, not judging it. And so a lot of people access it this way. So I'm just realizing, not just realizing now, but I realize the byproduct of using such a tool can be opening up to yourself to become more sensitive, to be able to sense and feel and be open to communicating with the animals, for example, like I said, or even opening and developing your third eye and being able to see the other dimensions. Like I said, my imaginary playmate has come back. I don't see him, but I can hear him. And he helped write a portion of my third book as well. It's just amazing what happens when you start opening yourself up in these levels.
Oh, absolutely. Especially when so many people are afraid that opening themselves up by using the board is going to be opening themselves up to negativity. And, you know, you're just showing that it is, you know, it's going back to what we're saying, it's all about the intention. You will be open, but you'll be open to the right things that you want to allow in if you just have that mindset.
Absolutely. Mindsets at all. And as I said before, I always put it back on the building block. The blueprint would be your beliefs. And so people say, well, I think it's negative. Well, then, you know what, don't use this tool. I'm definitely not here. I want everybody to understand this, and I know Tim knows this. We've had conversations before about this. I'm not here to convince you to use a tool. I'm just here to share my little itty-bitty path over here to the side that I've done, because it just helps people understand there's so much more out there. Throw out the tool. Throw out the fact that I'm using a Ouija board to get a lot of these messages, but just hear the message of what I'm sharing. And what I'm sharing is there's so much more that meets the eye, so much more that we've been told in life, and you can access that and tap it and touch it. You've got to find the way that works for you, if you choose to. And if you don't, that's okay too. We're always going to evolve and grow. It doesn't matter how you do it. We all eventually get there. It's like there's many, many paths to the top of the mountain, some wise sage once said. It's just what path you choose to take. And we're all going to evolve. And it's not like it's better or worse that I'm doing this. This is a path that I went down, and I'm happy about it because, you know, I really love the board. And what I love about it is the ingenuity of it, creating this at a time when the spiritualist movement was trying to use all these different tips and tools and techniques to have this communication. We're talking back in the 1800s, mid-1800s to late 1800s, where it was a little messy, and you had to go use somebody else often, and you couldn't do it yourself, or this tool made it, solidified it for people. They could do it themselves relatively inexpensively, and with their family and friends and in the parlor at night, and it became a simple way to start accessing these other realms. And people, you know, I'm not unique here, you guys. There's people, and I found this out a lot later. I found it out a lot later after I came out into the public in 2012 with what I've been doing all these years. It wasn't until a lot of my friends and colleagues I developed in this community of paranormal spiritualists started telling me other books people wrote back in like the early 1900s. Example is the book written by Stewart, who is married to Betty White. Stewart White, his name was. And he wrote the book called The Betty Book and the Unobstructed Universe. It was about his wife. And this is like in, let's call it early 1900s, like 1919, I believe it was, or 1923 when she got started. And she was at a dinner party, and the people there pulled out a Ouija board. And they said, let's start using it. And they were using it all for fun. But the board kept spelling out Betty. Betty, Betty. And I said, Betty, get over. She goes, oh, I'm not going to do that silly contraption. I'm not going to use that silly thing. I said, no, Betty, it's calling you. And she was like, okay. So she comes over, puts her hands on the planchette, and it works wonderfully for her. They start getting all these great messages and writes them down. It's all fun, entertainment. She's like shocked that it works so well for her. And then it says, get a pencil. So she gets a pencil, starts writing on paper. Same thing. She starts doing automatic writing. So this did something for her. So she was excited about this. Went home and ended up using a board for a very little bit. Used the paper, pen and paper for a little bit. Where then they said, why don't you just lay down? And you're going to go into a meditation. We're just going to come and speak through you. And then at that point, her husband, Stewart White, started dictating, take dictation of everything she was saying. And that's when they met this group of beings called the Invisibles, and they told them all about the constructs of the afterlife and consciousness. And I never even knew about this book, but I'm saying this is nothing new under the sun I'm talking about. People have been doing it for ages in different ways. But on the Ouija board, there's been people throughout history that go way back to early 1900s, all the way up to now, who are doing this. They're tapping into such greater consciousness than we think is possible than just the transition. You know, Jane Roberts is another person who did that. Her husband, Robert Buss, brought home a Ouija board, and they wanted to use it just to inspire themselves. They thought, let's just tap into, you know, maybe our higher self or spirit that can inspire me on my writing. And so Jane Roberts and her husband used it for about 3 months. They met through it a being who identified himself as by the name of Seth, who shared previous lives with Jane. And he says, now I'm going to work with you and I'm going to share all kinds of voluminous information you're going to write down. And after 3 months of using it, he said, I'm going to work directly through you. And then she became a trance medium, just not unlike Betty White from the early 1900s. So there's many people that use this tool. They may use it and stay on it. Such as, let me say another person that used it was Pearl Kearns, who talked to Patience Worth, a spirit from the 1700s. She stayed on the board her whole life till the very end. I'm the person that likes to do the board too. But some of us, we will get off the board and might just go right into direct channeling. I kind of do now a combination of all of it. So I just want to share this story just to say that there's so much more out there, and just to get out there and explore and be open to the message tonight, and maybe not so much the way it's done if you don't like the Ouija board, but here the message, and that's what's more important here than even me talking about the Ouija board.
And do you have different boards that you utilize for different intentions?
Well, that's an interesting question. I am a director and also an officer at the Talking Board Historical Society. We collect and preserve the history and share it and educate people about the history on this tool and the people who use it. So I enjoy collecting. And I have the smallest amount of boards in that group. Most of the guys there have hundreds of boards, if not over 1,000. As Tim, you know, Robert Mersch, mm-hmm. our chairman of the board. I have merely just a little over 50 boards. And so when I only need one board, you guys. You only need one board to communicate. And that has been my stance for many years until like the last 12, 15 years when I said, you know, they're really cool. I like the way they're all different, whether it's a spirit board or just a different kind of talking board. And I love how all these different boards, specifically the Ouija board, had changed hands of different companies over the years, and also how the style changed. And see, that's what this Talking Board Historical Society gets into. People think, oh, the Ouija board is one type of Ouija board. No, there's so many renditions of it. And the history of it is so cool because it often reflects pop culture, what's going on in the world at the time. So, like in the 40s, you get all these boards that have like more Egyptian in the East and something that's more mysterious to us as we begin exploring other countries. So you see this show up in the boards. And so, yeah, I have all these different boards. I do have a few boards, Tim, that I will use that are good traveling boards because they're not going to break, they're smaller, and so I'll use those when I travel. And I have boards that I just like to share and hang on the wall, or I won't use them too much because they're like really old, like my 1892, 93 circuit board or my 1910. I don't use it too much. I have other boards that are like in mint condition, like my pink Ouija that I won't use all that much. So I have some boards I don't want to use too much because I want to keep them in that condition. But the boards that I like to use the most, and my most favorite board, I'm going to stand by this probably till the end of my life, is my circa 1972 board that was given to me in 1973 by Santa Claus. I love that board. But my go-to board right now, when we do our sessions, is a board that's from William Fold. It's not a Parker Brother board. It's a larger board, and therefore the planchette doesn't tend to fall off on the edges. There's a lot of room around the letters for it to move. And it's a good size, nice size board, and that's the one I use mostly on my shows when I do the live channeling and Ouija board sessions because it's just easier to use. Now, I do have a very unique board that's made out of glass. My partner had it made for me, and it's totally etched glass on one side, has all these different characters and beings that I've communicated with over the years etched into it. And the guides come through, and they love it because they call it the universal all that is board because it kind of touches on by the symbolism of it, of all these different beings and different levels of communications I've had. And it's a very thoughtful board, and I really like that. That one I don't use as much. It's glass. I'm going to eventually make it into a table. It'll be like a seance table I can use. But, yeah, I have boards for different reasons. But when I can use any board, Tim. It doesn't matter what board it is. It could be the most hideous-looking board, the most scariest, spookiest-looking board. It could be just a piece of cardboard with the letters on it and numbers on it that I can use anything I will make on a fly. It could be on a sidewalk with letters and numbers, and as long as I have something that can move around smoothly, that could be my Ouija board. And I've often done that, just made them on the fly. And they all work. They all work, and I'll tell you why they all work. They all work because I work, because I believe that I can do this. It's me that allows them to work. It's my energy, my abilities, my thoughts, my intentions, my beliefs that allow it to work. And the board doesn't do anything. It's a neutral device. So any board will work.
All right. Well, we're going to take our next break here. When we come back on the other side, let's talk a little bit about the history of the board, just so that we can get people some background on it. And we'll also, I'll tell you about the Ouija board that I'm still looking for. As much as I'd like to have some really cool ones, there's one that I swear exists, but I can't find any proof of it online. So we'll talk about that when we come back in just a few moments with more Midnight Society as we're talking Ouija with Karen Dahlman here on Midnight FM.
Listening to Midnight Society with Tim Weisberg on Midnight FM.
And welcome back. We are talking Ouija with Karen Dahlman. And if you want to find out more about her or pick up her books, all you have to do is go to midnight.fm. That's our website. Click on that there, and you will see her photo. Click on that, and that will take you over to the page that we've made for her, which has all of her bio information, her links, social media, all of that, and also it has links for all of the music that we play here on Midnight Society. It is supplied to us from Matt Sharp and the Rentals. If you like it, it's from the album Q36, and there's actually a remix album of that Z36, and these are some of the alternate mixes that you get to hear here of those songs, but it was inspired by Matt Sharp's days when he was on the road with Weezer and on the road with the Rentals and listening to Art Bell on Coast to Coast and hearing all of those weird topics that were being discussed. Those songs are all influenced by those type of topics, including Conspiracy, which drops Art Bell's name and mentions Mel's Hole and all kinds of other things. So you can check that out all right there by going to midnight.fm. It's at the bottom of all of our Midnight Society guest pages in case you want to order the albums directly from Bandcamp or if you want to stream them on Apple Music or Spotify. And before the break, I had mentioned I was going to talk about the Ouija board that I've been looking for a while. Now, I will collect any board that anybody wants to give me. I'm happy to take it off your hands. I have an older one from the 70s. I have a newer one from, I think, when the movie came out, It Glows in the Dark. You know, mm-hmm. I have a nice wooden one with Tesla on it that was made by my friend Danny Perez, Danny Radical, mm-hmm. who makes great boards, including ones that he puts his own blood into, literally.
And then, I know.
it's kind of gross, but it's cool at the same time. So just use hand sanitizer before you use it the first time. But the one, Karen, I don't know if it was just in my imagination or if this is a real thing. When I was younger, we used to have this, we do have this store here in New England called the Christmas Tree Shops. And it sells a lot of, like, kitschy gift kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
And they used to have these magnetic travel size games. And they would have Chinese checkers. They had a little chess set. And it was like a little plastic case, maybe about as big as maybe like a cell phone. And when you opened it up, there was a board game in there that was folded up into fours. And so you would open that up and open the board up, and it's still a smaller version of what you would normally play on. And then it had magnetic pieces, and it was designed so you could play in the car. So when we were going on, you know, long drives to go camping in New Hampshire, we would get these and, like, play checkers with these magnetic pieces in the back. And I thought for sure that they had a Ouija game as part of this. And I've always wanted to find one because I've always wondered, is that the only one that isn't magnetic? Because you can't have a magnetic planchette.
You can, actually.
Really?
And I do remember those little magnetic games. I don't remember the Ouija in there. I had that, too. We do them, saying the card games. We traveled around the country. Yeah, we had the same thing, the checkers and all that stuff. So I have this board somebody made, and this I found it on Etsy not too long ago. And it's a miniature board. And by the way, little boards can work. This one's probably the size of, let me think, it's about 3 inches or 4 inches by about 6 inches. It's not very big. But the planchette itself has a little bit of magnetic to it. It has actually a magnet inside of it with two pieces of wood, really light balsa wood around it. So it does stick to the board. The board has a little magnetic in it, too. And it'll stick to it, but it doesn't stick hard enough where it won't move. So if it's too hard, like those checker things, it's not going to move. But it's a light magnetic, so it can sit there on it, but it can also still slide. And that does work. I've used it before with my little fingers, just like put a finger on it. So I would say look for the board. I mean, you guys, there's also these little boards. Do you remember these? Tim, you might remember this. They had these little miniature games on a key ring. They had, like, a little Monopoly. They a little, like, Clue or some little games. They also had a little miniature Ouija board. Yeah. And it's, like, no bigger than, like, 2 inches by an inch or something. It's not that big. And they have a little miniature drawer that pulls out with a little tiny planchette on it. Super hard to use. It could be done by yourself, but you can't get another person's finger on it. But these little boards can work, again, because you work. So there are some games out there that are cute like that can, you know, you can find and use.
I've seen people try to use the Ouija mints. I don't think that's going to work.
That's true. I've had a little Ouija mints before. Now, I'll see what I have, too. I have a Ouija mouse pad. And on one of my shows, we actually I think we used the mouse, and we might even use the planchette, but it, you know, it's small. It's like, I don't know, 8 inches by 5-6 inches. It works. That's pretty small. It works with the planchette or with the mouse. By the way, you guys, you can use a lot of things as your indicator, your planchette, as long as it's smooth enough to move across a board. So if you don't have your own Ouija board and you want to make one, you can just make one on the fly like I used to do all the time with poster board or cardboard. I love using paper sacks. And then, you know what works really nicely, Tim, as a makeshift CD? As a makeshift planchette is the old CDs that you might have laying around still. It could be a DVD, a CD. I have these little small ones that we used to put our business cards on them in business, oh, like 20 years ago. I don't know, maybe 15 years ago. I haven't used them in years, probably 15 years ago. And I have a lot of these extras, so I will use those and travel with those. If they break, I don't care. And they work as a great indicator because they even have a hole in the middle where you can see through and it lands on a letter. So there's a lot of things you can use as your indicator, too.
Yeah, there's probably... You know, no lack of Ouija products that have come out in the last couple of years. It seems like it's really taken off. Is that because people are more interested in it, or was there a new licensing agreement or something? How did it become that it all of a sudden it's on socks and backpacks and it's just everywhere?
I wore my Ouija socks the other night. I have a Ouija blanket right here with me. I have so much Ouija stuff. I just love it. Okay, so you gotta look at kind of the history of it. So in 1966, William Fold had owned it for a very long time, and that William Fold company sold it to Parker Brothers, and this is how popular it was in 1967. It outsold... Parker Brothers sold it on the market for 1 year. It outsold their largest, greatest-selling game at the time, which was Monopoly. It literally sold 1 million copies that first year alone. So it's not just popular now, it was popular then. And if you think back when you were a kid, they were like in a lot of people's homes. And this, we're going back to the 50s, 60s, people that are listening to the show that might be a little older. Myself, I was in the 70s, and you being in the 80s, 90s, or 2000s, Tim. Just kidding. You know, you said an older board was the 70s. I'm thinking that's a new board. Older boards for me are like 1892.
Well, I'd like to have one of those. I just don't have one that old.
Oh, they're phenomenal. I mean, you think about how many hands that has been through. And that, and by the way, Ouija first came out in 1890. 1891, it got its patent and trademark. So mine's like from the second year of being made. And that's by the Kennard Novelty Company. You know, there were so many different hands that passed through. But right now, Hasbro owns it. And then you have all these Ouija movies coming out. And so that gains in popularity, too. And I've got to say, in my own opinion... I mean, there's a lot of things that are going on in our culture and society, and a lot of uncertainty. People are reaching out to the Ouija board, too. That's happened throughout our ages. But because we have all this new excitement about the ghost shows on TV, I mean, every channel's got something on about the paranormal. And I think, and they'll show the Ouija every now and then, but people think, well, how can I talk to the dead? People think immediately Ouija board. Or they want to get spooked or something, you know, scary, the Ouija board. So it's really been used on all those levels, and so that, I think that's why we're seeing it gain in popularity. And then people that get the licensing rights to go ahead and make all the Ouija paraphernalia, or even to make Ouija board, use the name Ouija, because again, it's patent and it's trademark and patent that's owned by Hasbro now. They have to get the licensing rights to do it, but they allow other companies to do that. So then you see all these different, you know, forms of Ouija coming out, the different styles and designs, and then of course at Halloween, everybody thinks, Ouija, so you'll see like, Cost Plus, imports, you know, bringing in their new different Ouija boards. Spencer's, you'll see them online. All these different, these like Spirit Halloween, they're always selling a Ouija board. So yeah, they are gaining popularity on some level, but they've always been kind of popular, to be honest with you.
Yeah, we have a show on the network called Riffanormal, hosted by our friends Jeff and Gary, and Gary brought a story to the show a couple weeks ago that there's a dollar store in England called Poundland, which is a great name for a store. I can't wait to go to Poundland. But they're selling Ouija boards there for a dollar or a pound.
Whoa,
I guess a pound.
That's cool.
So, yeah, there's going to be a lot more of them hanging around through England and through the UK this holiday season. So, originally, from my understanding, it was... something that, you know, I've heard you talk about it, I've heard Merch talk about it, where it was really something that was almost like a social, like a parlor game, that when people came over, they would pull it out, that one of the cool things about it was at a time when a young man and woman were dating, it wasn't polite mm-hmm. for them to hold hands or touch each other while sitting there together, but when you played the Ouija board, you could each put your hands on the board and touch your hands, and you could touch your knees under the table, and so it was almost kind of like a good dating game as well.
Absolutely. You hit the nail on the head there, and Norman Rockwell created that picture on one of his covers of the Digest, which shows them actually, a man and woman, using the board. But he's kind of looking, you know, at her chest, and she's right. All serious, you know, trying to get it to work, but he's like, you know, looking at other things and touching knees, like you said, on the table. It definitely was a way to be more social. And yes, it, you know, when the Ouija board came out, it was right at the time of, we just gone through a civil war here in the United States, and it was a way to begin communicating with the loved ones you lost in that terrible carnage. And it became a way, as I mentioned a little earlier, to do it yourself and not have to worry about going through the trickery and the tomfoolery and the charlatans of the day. And there were a lot of them around. Or you had to hire a medium and, you know, all this stuff they were doing with trying to communicate with spirits. It's like you didn't have to go through all that, those games. You could just buy your own game. And by the way, you guys, it was patented and trademarked as either a novelty item or a game, a toy or a game. So that's why it still is marketed as a toy or game. That's what the original patent was under, a toy or game. So that's why you see it, and they call it a game. Now, people want to argue and say it's not a game, and I'll say, well, that's what it was called. And the people that made it created it and sold it as a novelty item, as a game. But I'm here to say I don't think it's a game either. I find it, and I use it in very different ways. But it was as a game. So people used it, like you mentioned. It was like fun. It was something to try. And yes, people did believe it could work. Other people used it just to get close to somebody. You know, there's always ulterior motives to a lot of things, you know. You can twist them around.
Yeah, I mean, sure. I mean, anybody's going to utilize it for their own purposes. One of the things that I've always enjoyed about using it with other people is it gives you some insight and a mindset into just how much they are willing to believe. Because some people are going to sit down and have the mindset of, you know, I don't think this is going to work at all. Other people think, oh, this is going to work, but it's you that's moving it. Other people sit there and wonder, is it me moving it subconsciously, and I'm not sure. And then other people are like, okay, it's definitely the spirits that are moving it. So you get to kind of see really where somebody lies in that thinking before you're, you know, that's why I use it usually at the beginning of an investigation, because you get a feel for what people are thinking and how they're feeling before they actually start trying other things.
That's a great idea, yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's a way to see where people are with it, and not even to judge it. It's just to say, you know, we all come to this tool with if we choose to use it, we all come with our own mindsets, and that's interesting. And so it's always good to talk about, you know, if you work with a partner, say, hey, you know, what do you think about this wall? You might go, I don't think it works, but I'm willing to try it. And that would make a good partner to start with, because that's somebody who at least has the openness to, okay, I'll try it. Or someone might say, no, I'll never touch that. That's probably not the person you want to try the board with. You know, you gotta weigh that out. But if you're just curious and you kind of want to explore, it could be a good tool to start with. But as you mentioned, Tim, it doesn't always work that well. You know, you sit there and you sit there and question yourself. You question the partner if they're pushing it, and you question, is this just myself, the idiom motor we mentioned earlier, or is this really spirit? And even when you first start using it, you guys, it's gibberish anyway. You'll get a lot of mixed up letters, and you might just start getting, you might get a word and just says the word over and over again, or you might get something that could possibly be a word if you move the letters around and you go, well, the spirit's dyslexic. I always say don't necessarily trust the messages in the beginning. Really don't trust the messages for a long time. Use it as entertainment in the beginning. Just get used to what it feels like. Get used to getting in the habit of writing down the messages. And then, you know, something will come along, and at some point, you'll start to get a real poignant message, and you'll go, oh, God, I just broke through. When that happens, you do break through. It's like you go, whoa, what was that? This is a real message. I know I wasn't pushing it. It wasn't gibberish. It was actually a full sentence, and it's relevant. And so that happens. And when you start getting these breakthrough moments, it just grows from there. So when I use the board now, I'm getting pages and pages without the planchette stopping. It'll go on and on. Or it could be a paragraph. That's all it needs to say. When I say it, the guides, I always talk to the guides or whatever energies I'm working with that's coming through that I've invited or the guides have brought through first. It's like it could be, sometimes it could be just a sentence, but typically they're very verbose. They have a lot to say, and they just go. I just let go and let them have at it. And once in a while we get a few misspellings, and the reason why that, they tell me, is because they have to bring your energy down so low and we have to raise ours so high that in the translation of it, because it's such a laborious, slow process to write every letter out and call it, if you guys watch when I do it, although it moves pretty fast for me, it's a laborious process than just a direct translation, or if you're a transmedium, just bringing the energy and messages through. So a lot of, some of that, it gets lost in translation. So we may be missing a word sometimes, or a letter, or misspelling once in a while. But overall, they're pretty precise. And they're very concise, and they don't mince their words when they choose certain words. In fact, Tim, I've had some sessions where I've gotten some words that I didn't quite... I got some words I thought was misspellings, but no, it was like an old way of spelling that might have been an old English language way of spelling. I've gotten some words I didn't know. I've gotten things to me that came in Roman numerals to give me a date. I've gotten even... I even got Spanish before. So you can get other languages, and again, if I'm talking to the animals, that's a whole different language. But what happens is you get interpreters that can help out on the other side. You start developing those up. But yeah, it's amazing what starts coming through. But in the beginning, it's tough, and it's gibberish typically, and you know, it's hard sometimes to use in a paranormal investigation because of that. If somebody's not seasoned at using it, when I use it on an investigation, I want to make sure I'm using it. When I'm invited somewhere, I want to use it with one of my partners who we already have a relationship established, and we're always pretty good at using the board, or really good, and then it's much more meaningful for me. However, I have used it with new people. I might sit down with them, and we've gotten some relevant things. It's just not as detailed as I might get when I work with somebody that I've been working with at the board for a long time, and they're really invested in this process.
Well, you talk about, you know, things coming through again and again, and one of those has been something that's been a subject of controversy for the last couple of years, and that is the Zozo phenomena. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I did write about it, and I know Darren Evans and Rosemary Allen Guiley and I were really good friends, used the board together, and they wrote that book, The Zozo Thing, The Phenomenon, and I write about it on my website. I also wrote about it in my third book. I wrote a whole chapter on evil. So what I think about Zozo, first of all, I think it's a thought form, it's a tulpa, and not to say it's fake or wrong or not real. What I'm trying to say is that it's something you can create and constellate. So it's almost like archetypal energy. So there's this universal archetypal energies we all tap into. And typically an archetypal universal energy is something we all can resonate with. For example, if you smile at somebody, almost in every culture around the world, they're going to sense that too. It's like you're going to feel it. You may not know the words that mean smile, I'm happy, I'm pleased, but you're going to feel that. So that's like a universal body language we can use. But there's universal energies we tap into, and some of them could be like the maiden, the mother of the crone. That's been used a lot in Roman and Greek mythology or other kind of mythologies. It could be the wise woman, the wise man, the eternal boy, the princess, all these kind of universal things. Those are real generic, but I believe that in our minds and in the heart of humanity is where evil lurks. We're the ones that do horrific evil acts. We're the ones that create that. And other types of beings do too. They could do evil things. Is it an energy floating around out there? For me, no, not in my life, not in my world, and it doesn't exist for me. And so when people say Zozo comes, it creates evil and havoc, it's that you're tapping into some kind of archetypal energy, which I would say is the energy of something that represents negativity. Call it what you want. You can call it demon, devil, Zozo. Doesn't necessarily mean it's legit or it's an energy you have to tap into and you will tap into. You start drawing it to you and then it becomes a constellation in your life. So you create this energy form, tulpa thought form, that you draw to you. Doesn't necessarily have to come to you. And so people will say they get on the board and it starts going O-Z, O-Z, or Z-O-Z, or Z-A-Z-A, la la ma ma na na, all this stuff. And I got to be honest with you, when you first start using this tool, often the planchette, the indicator, will go back and forth. And just so happens that most Ouija boards, talking boards, I'll say, all Ouija boards, they are all like in a horseshoe, not horseshoe, it's like a horseshoe, like a rainbow. It's like the letters are laid out in that kind of format. And that's done because you could take your hand and it could easily move to the left, to the right, and stay in that same format. And so on one end, you've got consonants, and on the other end, you've got more vowels. And so the O and the A are over here on the left side, and then you've got the Z, the L, the M on the right side, and then you just go back. Your planchet tends to go back and forth or around the board. And I find this happens with all the different energies and beings that I communicate with. They will go around and move around the board in different manners, which becomes their signature, their spirit signature. But that's a typical movement they'll do from end to end. And if you so happen to think, oh, it's stopping there and it's going here, you could freak yourself out if you start reading these legends and these superstitions, Ouija stitions that are about the board online, and you start going, oh, I got a bad demon. Well, it's so funny for us to think that we could pull in, that we're that powerful to pull in something, energy like that. So I'm not against people working with daemons, D-A-E-M-M-O-N or M-E-N. That's truly a sprite or a muse, an inspiration. And I think that word's been changed over the years, and then it became demonized by certain religions and certain groups that wanted to have control. And I write about that in my third book, too. I write all about this origin of evil, and I get into Zozo, too. But I do believe that Zozo is nothing that you need to constellate if you choose not to. You can just as easily constellate spirit guides or angels. It's your choice. And the cool thing about this, it's free will. You get to choose. And so if you feel like you're getting something negative on the board, you can choose to not go that direction and bring that energy forth. You can choose not to. And there's many ways of doing that. And that's what I tell people. I said, life is hard enough as it is. And you get ever in your life, you get anything negative on a board, or even in your life, people talk to you poorly. You don't deserve that. You just say, I'm not going to allow that. You're bye-bye. You're done. Bye-bye, Felicia, kind of thing. And I did the same thing on the board. Years ago, I learned to do that. I don't have to do that anymore. The probably one of the most important things I can tell people who are new at using this tool is when you start using this board, really try to align with, like, a deceased loved one, like I said, a spirit guide, your higher self, and then you're going to develop a energy force that has your best interest at heart. Mine was actually a deceased person. Her name was Wilma Jean. She was a slave, but she was an educated slave. She taught herself to spell and read and all this stuff, but she was killed at the hands of her master, quote unquote. And she stuck around because she wanted to help people. She wanted to be a teacher because of how she educated herself. And I found her, and she became my bouncer, my gatekeeper, my mistress, master of ceremony. She would be the one on the other side I always used to talk to. This is when I was younger. For 15 years until I started meeting the guides and Mary Angel and some of the other beings I started communicating with. But she was the one that would be the gatekeeper. So it's good to have that. And even people from the spiritualist movement or people who do mediumistic work, they often talk about what they call a control. And a control is that other being that can work with them on the other side to kind of like, hey, get in line, next, take a ticket, next, you're up, kind of thing to help you organize your sessions. And that's what I say when you start. Learn that tactic first, and then you'll get to a point where when you log in, I call it logging on now, when I log on to the board, that I can always reach now the guides. The guides always, every time, come through first, always. And that I would say they must be my moderators, but they're more than that, too. But things to think about when you use this tool.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to take our next break here. When we come back on the other side, we'll continue talking about Ouija with our guest Karen Dahlman. Also during the break, if you want to go and check out ParaboxMonthly.com, you have plenty of time now to sign up for the December Parabox shirt. My new shirt arrived today in the mail, and it was a very, very cool one. It was all about the Montauk Project, and I got the little card to try to figure out the puzzle. I'm going to work on that tomorrow. What I mean is I'm going to bring it into Spooky South Coast and see if Stephanie and Moniz can help me figure it out. And I'll be wearing the shirt as well. And it is certainly a beautiful shirt, and it's a different color than some of the other ones that have come in. It's kind of like a light gray shirt, so that'll be something new. Kind of an olive-colored shirt, really. Something new to add to my collection. But I was wearing my Easter Island shirt tonight and getting compliments on that. So stay tuned. We'll be back with more Midnight Society during the break. If you want to go and get one of those shirts, just go to ParaboxMonthly.com, and you can either get the monthly subscription or buy some of the previous stock. Make sure you use our promo code Midnight, M-I-D-N-I-G-H-T, and you'll be able to save 20% on your entire order, all at ParaboxMonthly.com. All right, as I said, we'll be back in a moment with more Midnight Society right here on Midnight FM.
You're listening to Midnight Society with Tim Weisberg on Midnight FM.
And welcome back into Midnight Society here on Midnight FM. We are talking Ouija with Karen Dahlman tonight. And I should have had Amy tell you the numbers, because we're going to open up the phone lines. If anybody has any questions or Ouija experiences that they want to share, you can do so. Amy, what are those numbers again?
Call into the show. Dial 508-322-1985. That's 508-322-1985. Or Skype midnight.fm.
Thank you very much. And it's nice that I can get her to just do that whenever I want her to. And of course, you'll also be able to call in later on the program, on the Midnight Drive program. But you'll probably want to use the Amy numbers for that. So I'm talking to you, Lamone, if you're listening. I'm going to turn off my ability for people to call in. And you'll have to call in on her number, because that gives greater control over the phone call, because the broadcast is originating on her end. So a little behind-the-scenes info that you probably don't need, but an explanation as to why I won't be taking calls on my end on Midnight Society, on Midnight Drive, rather. It doesn't work out when I do it. All right, let's get right back into the discussion with Karen as we're talking about all things Ouija. And one of the things that I've noticed in recent years when it comes to the board and the way that it's been presented is they've tried to find a way to make it so that it is accessible to everyone. They've, you know, I don't know if that's a decision from a marketing point of view. I'm sure it is. But there seems to be, you know, whatever it is that you need the board to be, it can be. So if you're into something, there's customized boards, there's pink boards that they think that young girls will want to use more. It's just they seem to be trying to find a way to have a board for everyone.
Yeah, and that goes to the point of not all boards are Ouija boards. So let's talk about that difference first. So
sure.
The umbrella name for any kind of board that has the alphabet numbers on it, planchette, would be called a talking board. Or you can call it a spirit board, too. So we have a lot of boards out there, like you were mentioning. You did mention the pink board, which was made by Ouija itself. So that was a true Ouija board. But there's other boards out there customized to, you know, whatever you want it to be. It can be customized to your type of philosophy you follow. It can be customized to something you practice. It could be customized to, you know, games. It can be customized to, like the movies. So you have, even customized to, like, Ozzy Osbourne. I mean, there's boards out there that are customized to whatever it is you like. And so there are companies that create those. There's people that just make their own because they like a certain kind of picture or image. Like, for example, my glass board has all these customized images on it. And I wouldn't even call it, it's not a Ouija board, I would probably just call it a spirit board or talking board. So there are so many boards out there for that reason. And what it is, I think, Tim, is that people resonate with different things. You know, people resonate with the shows they watch or the movies or their pop stars or singers, and they might buy that board that's made for that person. There's even a David Bowie board. There's a Bowie board out there. I mean, there's so many different types of boards because people are creative, and they say, this is what I resonate with. I resonate with this type of design, and so I'm going to get that kind of board or I'm going to make that kind of board. And I think what you're seeing is a lot of people being creative enough just to not even go buy boards but make their own. And I'm on a lot of social media groups that, especially on Facebook, they're about the Ouija board or talking boards. And people are all the time showing the boards they make, what they look like, and they're very creative. I mean, it's interesting how they can look, and yet they all can work again. But, yeah, I think people have gotten to the point where they're like, you know what, I can make this myself, and I'm going to make it exactly what I like. One really positive thing about that, people always ask me, what type of board should I get? And I go, It's not like, oh, you've got to get a Ouija board made by Hasbro or you must get one from William Fold. I say find the board that you resonate with. A lot of people resonate with angels, so they might go buy a board like an angel board. And there's several different groups to make angel boards out there. Or the psychic circle. They might resonate with something that doesn't look so ominous or traditional like a Ouija board. So that's why they're out there, because it is marketed that way. People want different designs. People don't resonate always with Ouija, so they resonate with those spirit boards. And people have told me, because I use an angel board, I can't get demons. I'm thinking you can get anything you want through these boards again, it's really up to yourself, and it's really your beliefs and intentions behind them. But I can take the scariest board out there, spookiest board, or one that's made not even that well, and it'll work for me. It'll totally work for me. So really, it's really what you resonate with, and that's why there's such diversity out there. It's like, you know, what fits, what works best for you? What do you like?
Have you ever tried making your own board?
All the time. I love to show this when I do some of my shows and presentations, is I have a paper sack. I just took a Trader Joe's bag. I shop at Trader Joe's. I love Trader Joe's. I go there, and I get their paper bags, and I was teaching a class, and I just said, you know what, I'm going to show you today how you can just be anywhere and make a board. I took a paper sack. I was telling them about Ouija, and I was cutting the sack up, opening it up, flipping it back, so it was only so big, getting one of the panels behind it. And then I just started writing on it with a Sharpie, A, B, C, D, the whole alphabet. I put yes and no on there, and that's it. Oh, I put numbers on there, too. And I just showed them how I took in a plastic lid, and I cut like a little opening in it, just like a Cool Whip lid, and I cut like a little triangle, so it could be like the open indicator part. And I said, watch this, and my board partner and I demonstrated how that would work. I make them out of cardboard when I was younger, and I would be at a friend's house, or it could have been in college, even when I was in high school, might be somewhere, and they lift to Ouija. Okay, cool. Do you have a pizza box? I loved using pizza boxes. Everybody had pizza boxes, you know, especially in college. Who didn't have one of those around somewhere? So I would just take that and write the letters and numbers on it, and away we would go. I was always making my own Ouijas. And I've never made one that's just like a beautiful piece of artwork, because I know so many people, and I have so many friends who are great artists, that people make boards and send them to me. I'm just very fortunate like that, and I'm very appreciative that I have such incredible pieces of one of a kind, or they maybe just made a few of them, and they're beautiful. I mean, different shapes, round, oblong shapes, rectangle, square, circle, all everything. They're made out of, and they're just all different, unique, and beautiful, and they're part of my collection. I treasure those. So, people, you can make your own board, and I often do. Mine are just makeshift. That's what mine are.
Yeah, I almost wonder if it's almost like kind of a like a Jedi type thing, where you know as part of your training and learning to use these boards, if you shouldn't sit down and make your own, because sitting there and designing it and drawing it, you know, it kind of gets you intimately related with it, and it just might have some dividends.
I would absolutely concur with you 100%. People often, that's how they get into it. They go, I like Ouija, I want to make my own. And then they go, well, it doesn't really work yet, but I like it. You're right, they resonate with it. They put their energy into it. I think, okay, this is what I tell people, and I would say, I would add that, you know, but that wasn't my path, but I would add that because I've seen other people do that, and I've watched them grow for those reasons, because they really treasured this piece of artwork, and it was that, a piece of artwork. Then they wanted to explore it. It felt like a part of them was in it. Like, you know, Paris does with his blood. He thought, like, there's a part of me in it. It's like you resonate with it because you put your energy and effort into it. And there's something to be said about that. I also say, if you really want to learn about using the Ouija board, really understand your tool. Understand the history of it. Read about it. There's some great websites out there that you can go to. The Museum of Talking Boards by Gene Orlando, that's a good one. WilliamFold.com by Robert Murch. I have a lot of articles on my website, too, where we're the ones that really, I've been using them, or we've been researching them, or they're historians, and they collected all these boards, and they know the history of the boards. So really learn the real history of them. Learn about William Fold and what his relationship was to it. Learn about Charles Kennard when he created it, when it was first patented. Learn about the planchette that came over in 1858 from Paris over to the United States, and that was the automatic writer first. It's like I'm also an artist. I do artwork, and so for me, when I was trained as an artist in school, I also had to learn all the different media and how it works with each different types of media, and create all these different things, get familiar with what goes into making a piece of artwork. And when you have that familiarity and that kind of relationship, it's so much sweeter. So if you don't feel like you can make your own, or at least draw one out, like I said, on a cardboard, it doesn't have to be perfect. And then learn the history, too. Understand the people behind it. Learn the facts. And we try to share that. Go to tbhs.org, Talking Board Historical Society, tbhs.org, that's the Talking Board Historical Society, where we have all the members of that, and they all have offshoots of their own websites, and there's facts there about what this board is, the tool is about. And so I say learn that. Really try to educate yourself on what it is you're using, why it was used, who used it, when they started using it. And some of these stories I told you about, like Jane Roberts or Betty White and Pearl Kearns, I mean, there's so many more people. And then you start to have an appreciation for the rich history behind this tool. And the people that used it and how it changed and developed over the years and the different spiritualist movements, and even learn about spiritism that came out of France because they have their own movement of working with the deceased, and learn where it started, you know, how they use it back then and how it can be used today. And so familiarize yourself with that, and then it's like you have a greater understanding of the richness to this tool. There's so much to learn about it.
So when, you know, you talked a little bit about the Talking Board Historical Society, what is the goal of the organization?
Well, the goal is really to educate the public, to help understand the facts about behind the Talking Board, which includes Ouija board, spirit boards, but also to share with people and do things in the public. We raise a lot of money, and we will go into the public. For example, here's an example. We put a gravestone up for Helen Peters. She was the only woman business person that was involved with the Ouija in the very beginning. People didn't even know about her for years. Robert Murch did the history and researched and found out about this woman. It met her family, and that's one of the things these members of this board, this group, what they do is we meet these people, research, find out, talk to the relatives of people who created the board, which is what Robert Hirsch has been doing for years, and then share the stories behind it. And you get to know the people who really used it and created it and their stories. And so we try to bring those facts forward because, seriously, even when I was using the board up to probably 15 years ago, I didn't really understand much of history about it at all. And around that time, that's when Robert Murch was digging into a lot of this stuff. So back to this gravestone, it was a couple years ago. Miss Helen Peters was buried in a plot of like an extended family. They adopted her as part of her family. And there was about 7 people buried there, but only, I think it was 3 names were on this plot. And the other people didn't have names listed. They didn't have the money for it. Her gravesite was found. It was in Fairmount Cemetery in Denver, Colorado. Well, Robert Murch discovered all this and began reaching out to the family, and then we got around him with this, and we started raising money. And a lot of you people out there listening probably helped us with some of the fundraising. And we raised enough money to create this beautiful monument to honor her as the mother of Ouija. She is the one that originally was using it when the Ouija board named itself. She was also the one that went down with the patent attorney, Elijah Bond, and used it in front of the patent attorney to get it patented, to receive that patent trademark. There's so much history there, and so we want to share that and show it. So we created this beautiful gravesite, and you can go online and look it up. It's also on our tvhs.org. You'll see pictures of it there. And we had an event. People came out. We also had a great museum of our boards. We have a traveling museum of boards. We brought boards from all different eras. All of us contributed some of our best boards to it. We gave talks on it. We gave the family this plot. We put everybody's name on it, on this monument. And then we honored Helen Peters. And the family was so gracious, so loving, and they love the fact that we would do this for them. And so we try to bring an awareness. So what's happened now since then is that they have this famous tour in there of famous women who are buried in this cemetery, and now Miss Helen Peters, Knopfworthy, when she got married is the last name, she is now part of the tour, and they take you to this plot, and you get to see this huge monument, and we actually have the picture of the sun and the moon on it from the Ouija board and some sayings, and we talk about her as the mother of Ouija and honor her. There's things like that we do in OuijaCon, and by the way, we just did OuijaZilla, the world's largest Ouija board per Ripley's. That was Rick Schreck, who's the VP of the Talking Board Historical Society. All of us gathered around him again and helped him assemble it once he created it. We helped him assemble it in Salem last year, and it was up for about a day and a half. It was just over a week in the very beginning of October, and people loved it. And then Whippers, Believe It or Not, came out, and now he's actually in the book with the Talking Board Historical Society, as this is the world's largest Ouija board, and the world's largest planchette. So we try to bring in fun ways, creative ways to show you what this tool is about. And so, you know, making the world's largest to show you that we can do that, but also to show you a little history about it. We talked about it. We talked about, you know, the creativity that went into it and people that supported it. But also, where did this come from? We're all this history is what we try to do. Preserve it, share it, honor it, and tell you, give you the facts about it.
I mean, I'm somebody that is an advocate of that. Any time that you get into something, you should know the history of it. And you know that goes back to, like, even if I watch a TV show, like, part of the reason I couldn't get into Doctor Who when everybody else was getting into Doctor Who when the revival series came out is, for me, I would have had to go all the way back to 1963 and start watching the original William Hartwell. And I did that, too. I went all the way back, and I got them all, illegally online. And I started watching them all from the very beginning, and I just realized, like, there's thousands of these for me to get through, and I'm just never going to get through them all. So, and that's just how my mind works. But I think, you know, when people get into paranormal research, they need to go back and learn about those who came before them and the old techniques and all of that. And I think the same thing goes with Ouija. You know, they should go back and learn the history of it before they really dive into, you know, it's one thing to sit down with a group of people and start utilizing it. But if you really want to get into using it seriously, you need to know the history of it.
That's the key. You said it seriously. So if you're learning a new sport and you really want to get good at it and do it seriously, you're going to go back and learn the basics first. Golf is a great example. I don't know if you golf or not, but I attempt to golf. You really have to learn the swing, learn about the different clubs, what they're used for. And then I found myself wanting to learn about some of the great golfers before me. And how the clubs had evolved through the years. It's like you start to have a greater appreciation for your craft. And I want to say doing any of these things like using Ouija, it becomes a craft. And I mean it in the loose sense of it becomes my tool, my craft. I learned how to use it, and I have such an appreciation for it that now it becomes just second nature to me because I've explored so much about it. And so when I became part of the Talking Board Historical Society, it really helped me solidify even more being involved with these events we're doing and being out there and talking to the people and meeting them and hearing what their experiences have been and sharing ours or mine and having this dialogue. You become that much richer in it when you start reaching out with other people and learning all this. And you can join even groups when you start learning more about the board, too.
Yeah, so you're saying there were Facebook groups that focus on Ouija?
Absolutely. There's quite a few out there. Just type in the word Ouija, and you're going to find, I don't know, at least 10 that pop up. And ask to join those if you're serious about getting into it. And a lot of you listening may already be involved in those groups. You may even see me in there. I'm in a bunch of them talking and sharing. And, it actually becomes almost like this club. I mean, you go, what board did you just buy? And, oh, my God, this is the board I just created. And what are your experiences? We're in there sharing and supporting each other in our exploration with this tool. And it becomes this whole subculture, if you will, in a way.
Yeah, I mean, I think anybody that gets into, you know, spirit communication, no matter what form they do it with, that when they start communicating with other people that are doing the same type of work, they can learn new ideas, they can learn new things. So, you know, one of the things that I use on investigations is an app called EchoVox. And mm-hmm. I'm part of the EchoVox Facebook group, and people will share their actual file settings of what they like to set up there, because, you know, it's very customizable, the app. And so they'll share their settings there, and then other people will download that and load it into theirs and try their settings and say, hey, here's what I got. You know, so it becomes kind of a very much a community of people that are trying and experimenting and sharing things with each other. I wonder, though, we talk about being able to utilize the Ouija to connect with spirit, and you were talking about being able to utilize it to connect with your pets, both past and currently with you. So can we communicate ourselves, currently living people, with each other?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great question. And so because we have free will, okay? You can't just tap into somebody's mind unless they allow you to. So I've had people ask me and come to sessions and say, I want to reach my higher self. Can you tap into that for me? I'll say, if you give me permission and allow, let's see what we can do. You absolutely can. And that's what's interesting. That's why the higher self experiment, I wouldn't have known this if I didn't get out there and test this out myself for those 4 years. It's like I just kind of stumbled upon these things now. So back to the whole group thing. I share a lot of this in these groups, and I share a lot of it on my website, too, and also in YouTube, is because I don't want people to have to recreate the whole process again. Let's keep the baby in the bathwater and just go from there. You can build from it. It's like there's so much to explore and so much more to do. So yeah, all this I share, and I think it's important to think about what you can do with this tool, as I tell people all the time. And so if you do want to, you know, start talking to somebody else's higher self. Again, you're not going to be able to crack the code unless they give you permission, because the free will block you. It's like, start working with your own higher self. I said, that's a great place to start, because it's not spooky, it's not scary. You're just talking to that part of you, your higher self, your greater self, that part of you that just really gets you. And I know you guys know what I'm talking about. It's that part of you, once in a while, you'll hear this really positive voice within you. It's not the negative talk you hear. It's when you hear, oh, I can do this. Yes, you can do it. And it answers back in a way, and you go, oh, that's just me talking to myself. Well, it's actually a greater party that's supporting you. And so you can tap into that. And if you just get beyond these walls or the boxes that we keep ourselves limited within in terms of how we see life, it's like you can open up to these concepts and, you know, test them out yourself. And you don't need a Ouija board to do this. You know, I tell people, if you want to even start with talking to your higher self, one of the best ways to do it is to keep a journal, and you write on there, dear me, dear HS, higher self, dear greater self, internal self, inner self, what do you want to tell me today? And as silly as it sounds, you just let yourself start writing. You're going to go, I'm making this up. Doesn't matter. That's how it always starts. You always feel like you're making this up. And then you start writing. And I'm not talking about automatic writing when the pen moves itself. I'm talking about you just a free flow of consciousness of writing. You just let it write. You might say, I'm not feeling too good. Now I'm feeling good. And all this, it'll say stuff to you. And then you start looking at it and you go, well, that's pretty insightful. That's your higher self, inner self, greater self starting to come through. That's the easiest way to tap it if you're not into this whole Ouija board thing, or you just kind of are blocked right now to get to use it that way. But yeah, a lot of these things I'm talking about, even animal communication, communication with angels, you can do this off the board. And I do talk about techniques of how to do that a lot, but my focus is I really enjoy the board, so I talk about that probably mostly.
Well, I'm biased. I think we can probably get into some of that when we come back. We have a break coming up in about 2 minutes, so let's make sure that we come back to that when we come back on the other side.
Perfect.
But when people are using the boards, you know, I know some people that will, you know, we talked about intention. We talked about, you know, making sure that you're using it to communicate with the right spirits. Do you think anybody should really be doing some kind of protection? You know, I know we were discussing kind of getting into a meditative state, but should they try to protect themselves in any way?
Well, you know, it's not a simple answer for me, and it's actually a big question. I think we should pick that up on your side. But okay. Let me just say, sure. I'll answer quickly here, yes, but I want to expand upon that because there's so much more to say about protection. And so, yeah, there's so much more. It's not a simple, easy answer for me to answer because there's so much more involved in that. Oh, I really want to touch on that subject a little bit greater and deeper.
Absolutely. Let's do that. We will take a break here coming up during the break. If you would like to get the best quality sound for Midnight Society and for Midnight Drive, which is coming up immediately following this program, and for all the great programs that we have here on Midnight FM, all you have to do is get yourself a Voice Duo AI radio. All you have to do to get that is go to voice.link, voiz.link, and that is the website where you can pick up the best quality streaming Wi-Fi radio on the market. And I don't just say that because, you know, Voice wants me to say that. I say that because I've tried some of the other ones, I've heard some of the other ones, and the problem that I find with most of them is, yeah, they connect with things easily, and, you know, you can have all your different apps playing for them, but they sound so thin and hollow, and they sound, you know, for something that is digital technology, it just sounds like something that is, you know, just not worth your time, not worth your effort. There's no resonance to it. There's no character to the sound. Well, you don't have that problem with the Voice. You get nice, big, booming bass. You get deep tonality with it. It sounds fantastic. All of my music sounds even better. Not my music, but the music that I listen to sounds even better through the Voice. And I know that Midnight Society and all of our great programs here sound fantastic through the Voice. And it works with your Alexa because it's built right in. So all of the skills that you have, you can just transfer it over to that. You can use TuneIn to listen to our network. But you can listen to anything that you want to, including Amazon Music, and Spotify and all those different services. They all work right there with it. If you would like to get one, they're normally $299. You can get one right now on sale for $199 or save an extra 10% by using our promo code Midnight, and you'll get that $300 radio for under $180. And there's a money-back guarantee after 30 days. If you don't like it, you can return it, but you won't return it. You will love it. Voiz.link, VOIZ.LINK. Promo code Midnight. Back with more Midnight Society in just a few moments on Midnight FM.
Show dial 508-322-1985. That's 508-322-1985 or Skype midnight.fm.
And back in with our final segment tonight with our guest Karen Dahlman here on Midnight Society. And we're talking about all things Ouija. And Karen, before the break, we were going to talk about the ways to protect yourself if you are going to be using the board.
Yeah, and I said, I did say yes, think of protection. But what happens is when you start to work with the concept of protection, it starts changing and shifting for you as you grow in your own spirituality. So let me explain what I mean by this. So if you're brand new to doing any kind of work where you're reaching beyond what your comfort level is and also reaching into the unseen dimensions, it's always good to be grounded. It's always good to work with the light. It's always good to approach it from, a curiosity without fear. It's always good to protect yourself, which could mean vibrationally. It could be like getting into a good meditative state. It could be saging. It could be many different ways people learn to protect themselves. I'm not here to tell you one way to do it because there's many ways out there. But what I say is use what you're already using in your life if you're using something. Let's say you got it from a different tradition, different philosophy, a different practice. Maybe you're doing it, using it when you do a dowsing rods or pendulum or something. Bring all that, incorporate it. Again, it's not creating all anew. It's incorporating what you already do that puts you in that comfort space. Okay, so you can call it protection. If you use the word or not, you don't use the word. It doesn't matter. What matters is you're in a vibratory state that welcomes this and allows you to be very centered and grounded. That's how I see protection. That's how I've used it. The other thing I want to say when you use this tool, what's really important is there's two things I always ask people to think about when they use this. Think about what allows you to enter the space to use this tool, and then what allows you to exit that space. What does that look like to you? And so I ask you to look at it as more like a ritual, kind of a ritualistic thing. For me, it's about setting the atmosphere, meaning I'm going to work with somebody who's in a good space to use it. I'm not going to bring in other kind of substances that are going to alter my thoughts. I'm going to maybe sometimes light a candle or just something that elevates my mood. Typically, when I get ready to do the Ouija board, I'm super stoked about it, that elevates my mood itself. And the fact that I'm going to use one of my boards that I really enjoy, that elevates my mood myself. And so then I do a breathing exercise. I do this exercise where I hold my partner's hand and I state a type of prayer, invocation. Again, bring in your own traditions. And then I always, this prayer I state always locks me into a higher vibrational state, which becomes my quote-unquote protection. Now, what I've learned over the years doing this so many times, and I don't misuse a board. I use many different traditions and techniques. I'm affiliated with Native American spirituality. I grew up in New Mexico and did a lot of stuff around that and learned a lot from some Native American traditions and people, and was invited to some of their tribes and feast days, and learned a lot that I began to incorporate some of those concepts. I study a lot of different traditions. That I found things that work for me, and I kind of do a piecemeal of what I found over the years that empowers me. And I remember I mentioned earlier, too, I talked about if you want to get to this level, this is the Vance Ouija, where you start bringing in all these different energies and you can always get great sessions. I mean, astounding sessions every time. This is like a Ouija, this is like Ouija 400 level. It's a graduate level Ouija. It's like get yourself into that space. Learn to find ways that elevate you, not just when you're on the board, but away from the board. Find times in your life where you can appreciate the small things in life. You can say thank you, even when your life's not going well. You can start working with your own energy. Maybe you do meditation. Maybe you get out in nature. Excuse me. Maybe you ground yourself. Maybe you like to sage. Maybe you like to work with crystals. Do those things that get you back to nature, get you back to your inner voice, that inner higher self I was talking about. These things you do away from the board, as you develop these things that way, you start becoming this core. What I literally see inside myself is this light. And it radiates in me, out, projects out, and it touches source, and it comes back through me. It's like I open myself to source energy. I open myself to light and love. But that's because of all these things I've been doing over the years off the board, that I become my own walking, talking, living protection, if that makes sense. So the protection is not something I have to do externally anymore. It's something that happens within me, and it's automatic now. But when I do sessions with people, I will state the prayer, and I will also do this little exercise, breathing exercise. And the reason why is to help people through the breath, through the sound of my voice, and through the prayer, the words itself, start to get into sync together in a certain vibratory space, that it's so much easier to make that connection when more people are involved. So that's why I can't, it's not a simple answer to say, yes, protect yourself, da 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 da. I have to kind of go into what how it evolves for people and what you become your own protection, basically.
Now, is there a time when people could... Well, they might want to utilize it without putting that protection on themselves? Is there ever a time when you don't want to be in that state?
Well, you know, it's really up to the individual. I'm open to different ways people use it. I know people who use the board who don't even subscribe to anything I just mentioned to you about spirituality and all that, and they still, the board works fine for them. This is just how I use it, because for me, it's become a tool I use to develop my spirituality too. So that's why that goes hand in hand with me. And I like I said, I use hypnosis and I use visualization as a therapist and trying to, you know, develop and evolve myself and involve people that come to my sessions. So it becomes this whole therapeutic event. It becomes this whole sacred space. We find a way to enter that sacred space together. And then when we're done, we leave that sacred space together and come back to the mundane. So it's like we go into this higher level and then we come back. But you don't have to do it that way. People approach this tool themselves. I just want to reiterate, I'm here to share a story of my own that worked really well for me, and I've helped many people use some of these techniques to help them really get the board to work for them in great ways. But I do know people that don't do anything, and they tell me they have great experiences, and I would say it's because they don't have a belief in fears, or they don't have a belief, and some people don't even believe in the afterlife, but they can use the board because they believe in the ideomotor or your higher self communicating to you. So there are exceptions to every rule.
What do you say to people that, you know, there's still a lot of people out there that think that boards are inherently evil. They think mm-hmm. that they're the tool of the devil. They're a gateway to hell. All of these different things. Is that a hard thing to convince somebody to come out of, or do you just not even try with somebody that's already of that mindset?
Well, you know, I'm not here to convince anybody, but if people want to have a dialogue and a conversation and not just accuse or call names, I'm game. I'm down for that. But when they start going, you're evil, you're demonic, or whatever, it's like, that's so childish. It's so immature. You have no idea who I even am. You have no idea who I am and I'm off the board and how I can do this stuff even without the board. So I always go back to, is it inherently evil? No. It is a piece of compressed particle board. There's no evil spirits lingering at Hasbro where they make these boards that jump into the board when you make them. So it's a neutral device. It is wood, it's glass, it's aluminum, it's whatever you make it out of. And yes, everything has a vibration to it because everything really is truly just molecules vibrating. We're just light. If you get down to it, we're all photon beings, just particles bouncing around. We're nothing solid. So yeah, there's definitely an energy to it. But it becomes what and this is what quantum physics tells us, it becomes what we project upon it, where we've put our focus upon, then all of a sudden that light beam becomes something else. Then it starts to exist. So we have to look at it that way if you want to break it down to quantum physics. But talking about it on just this level of it's a piece of wood or a particle board, there's nothing to be afraid of. But then again, everybody has their own level of superstitions or beliefs, and that's truly what's going to affect and influence how they're going to use it, what kind of results they're going to get. And so if somebody just says, it's inherent evil, I don't want to talk about it, I say, you know what, that's great, because in your life it is. And that's what it'll be. And I'm not going to disagree with that, because it's where you put your focus is what you're going to tend to get more of. And so, and that's just in life. That's not on a board only. That's in life. You know, you could say the glass is half empty or half full. And that's how you're going to go about life. And so I know it's not either one way or the other. There's a whole continuum of gray in there. But I'm just giving that as an example. So it's better to say, hey, this is a tool that works for somebody. And on one level, I don't know if they're pushing it themselves or it's idiom motor or it's a spirit or whatever. It doesn't matter. Okay, that person, but it's just not for me. That's one thing. But to say, oh, it's wrong, it doesn't work, I'm telling you, you're absolutely, whatever's it wrong, it can work. It can work. But it doesn't have to be negative. I'm a living proof of that for 47 years. And people go, oh, she's being kidded by evil spirits. I'm thinking, and then they hear I've been doing it 47 years. And I go, well, I haven't exploded yet. And by the way, my life is so much better for it. And it helps. And through it, I write lots of books and I meet a lot of people. And I got to tell you, I meet some of the best people through the Ouija board.
So one of the parts of the community that I've been impressed by, the people that utilize the board, is that there is, you know, we talked before about the great appreciation for history, but I think for a lot of people, the history for them only goes back to Fold and it goes back to, you know, Elijah Bond and all of that. But these boards, the idea of utilizing a board like this has been around for a long time, right?
Well, let's talk about that. So people, this is what people say. They always say, oh, guess what? The board comes out of ancient China or ancient Greece. We have found, this is what we do at the Talking Board Historical Society, we have found no proof of that, no evidence, and nobody wrote about there was this board with the letters and of that language on there, or some kind of symbols and numbers, and there was this device that moved around. Okay, there's always been devices out there that might point to letters and numbers, or that you may throw some bones or stones to cast something, and it's in a circle, and there's maybe it falls upon letters. There's different devices, but a Ouija board, we must talk about what constitutes a Ouija board or a talking board. What constitutes that is to have the letters in the alphabet, the alphabet letters, and the numbers, and a device called a planchet or indicator or something that moves around that can point or show the letters. And so when we first started seeing this, I mean, there's research that goes back, and we found it because of articles that were written. And back in the day when things went viral, you usually saw it in some kind of quarterly review. You might have seen it in a magazine, or you might have seen it like in the New York Tribune or the Boston Globe. And when things, you can find the articles written or the letters written, and you find these, you can read it, then you can start seeing when they're talking about what these devices were created from. So some of the earliest ones we can see were from the mid-1800s. So we're talking about, here's one from like 1871, and it was October of that year, and it was actually posted in the Quarterly Review. It was an article published where there was these two women who used this planchette-looking device on there, and they put their hands touched it, and it had some apparatus on it that would point, it would move around and just point to letters, almost like what the spiritualists were using in the day. They use their fingers and point to certain alphabet cards, and they point to it, and they'd feel when to stop on it, and that'd be the letter, then, okay, write that letter down. That would start spelling. Well, they actually had an apparatus that pointed to these cards, which was beginning to pair the idea of some type of moving device with the letters. Now, it's not on a board yet. Then we see in 1876 that in the American Spiritualist magazine, there was a husband and wife team, and they're talking about how they painted this like little miniature table small where they could put their fingers on it. And it went over a board that had letters on it, the alphabet. And it was like this little device. It kind of was like polished, and you could put your hands on it, and then it would move. So it's almost like they're starting to pair now. It's not necessarily a planchette, but it's kind of looking like that, and it would roll around, and it would get the idea that it might go to a letter. Now, so here we are, almost getting to the 1880s now, and then all of a sudden, 1886, it went viral in the New York Tribune. They started in Ohio for some reason. People out in Ohio. A bunch of them started using like a table marked up with letters. Then they had this little moving device, and it was more like a planchette. Now, that's when the talking board first appeared. It was really 1886. But when a talking board was originally manufactured, it was also 1886. And we know this, too, because in the Boston Globe, there was a board that was made. It was called the Witch Board. It was made by a company called the W.S. Reed Toy Company. They actually took this board, packaged it up and sent it to President Grover Cleveland when he got married to his young wife in the White House. And we know it was given to him because they took the letter and also sent it to the Boston Globe. And then it went viral. Everybody read about it. How the president got this, you know, got this tool, this device. And the president responded back and actually basically said, you know, I hardly think I'm going to use this to consult with the affairs of our country. But he said, I thank you for the ingenuity and sent it to me, you fine sirs. But they took the letter that they got back and also sent it to the Boston Globe. So it went viral. So that's where we see this idea, this technique, this apparatus starting to develop. But it was these business people, these men and this woman who came together and saw an opportunity. And they're the ones that made it really come together in a great way, packaged way, small enough that you could put it on your lap or use it on your table, and it could be sold cheap enough, and they could, you know, mass produce it, and it, you know, they named it Ouija because of a seance session they held, and it told them to name it Ouija, and that's where it really got its start. That's where the Ouija board really got its start, or the talking board concept really got its start.
Well, you had talked before about some of the Ouija-stitions. And I want to make sure that we cover them all. Did we miss any of the misconceptions people have about Ouija?
Well, I'll tell you when one of the greatest Ouija-stitions got started is with the movie called The Witch Board. And that came out in 1987. And I remember when it came out as well. And everybody's watching it and stuff. But Kevin Tenney, the producer of it, he did something really clever. It was the first time ever in a movie that the Ouija board had not just a cameo appearance like it did in The Exorcist. It actually was one of the characters in the movie. If you guys recall, the Ouija board actually became a character who had its own influence, its own life about it. They had to kill the board, you know, to get rid of the spirit. But what Kevin Tenney did, he took some concepts that were already superstitions, and one of the big ones he created was called spiritual entrapment. It was basically the term of the board could entrap you. If you use it enough, it could all of a sudden, and going around the board, the planchette, it could entrap you where you're addicted to it. When you get spiritually entrapped to this board, it's like it can take over, and it can take over your life. And so this is where some of the superstitions around the board developed. There were other ones developed before that. You know, a lot of other groups might say, oh, it's evil because they didn't want you to use it because you're not supposed to talk to spirits, so the Bible says, and all these different things. Those were all different superstitions coming together. And a lot of traditions say you're not supposed to talk to spirits yourself. How dare you do that? And then, you know, Kevin just played upon it in his movie and really ran with it. And that's when we start seeing some of the Ouija-stitions develop. And again, that word was coined by Gene Orlando. And Gene Orlando has one of the greatest websites about talking boards online. He has one of the original ones, the first one out there, and it's called the Museum of Talking Boards.com. By all means, go there. You will learn so much about the history of all kinds of talking boards, and you'll also learn a lot more about Ouija-stitions. But it was taking people's superstitions that people started projecting and placing upon the board and how they just grew over the years. So they grew over the years into something called the board rules, where our member, Rick Schreck, who's the VP, again, of the TBHS, he created a board, a T-shirt to call the board rules. And that's when people started saying things like, he just went online and found, what everybody's social media is saying. And they were saying, don't use it in a graveyard. Don't use it alone. Never ask when you're going to die. Blah, 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 all these things. And he created it into the Ouija-stitions on the board, the famous T-shirt he did. So, you know, there's just all these things. And anytime you have something mysterious nature, we try to make sense of it, so we project our own thoughts upon it. And that's really what starts superstitions anyway. We have to create a mythology, a folklore around it to understand it. Because really this enigmatic device is not to be understood. I can sit here and talk about this all night long and try to tell you how I believe it works and all these things. But truly, I can't prove that to you. All I can do is give you the messages, and I can tell you what I've learned from using this tool. And that for me, that suffices me when I find that it can be used in such great, incredible ways.
If you had to sum up for people the real best takeaway they can have from utilizing this board, would it be more about what it is that you learn through the board or what it is more that you learn about yourself by using it?
Well, it's a little bit of both, because if you get to this level and you want to get you to use the board the way I do, the messages you get back are paramount. It's paramount. But I love that you said it. It's really what you learn about yourself. If you can use any tool, it's not the tool again, it's you. It's taking the journey of pushing the boundaries of time, space, continuum, and consciousness and reaching through to the unseen dimensions and finding a way to do that. You're going to learn so much about yourself. You're going to, if you are willing to do it with, again, a curiosity, a drive to explore and discover, and feeling like you're an empowered individual, it is the journey. And the journey is the most important part. And you're going to find that you're going to come to get to the point where you're going to go, the tool doesn't matter at all. And what I've learned about myself is so empowering. I'm such a better person, or I'm more evolved, or I learned so much about this aspect of myself, or an aspect of spiritualism, or an aspect of something about the unseen dimension. That is the beauty of this. That's the beauty of this whole thing I'm talking about. And to me, my mission here is not to tell you to use the Ouija board. My mission here is to say there's so much more out there than meets the eye, what you've been told or spoon-fed, and it's time, and it's your given right, divinely given right, to be a part of that, connect with it, and explore it. Because from whence you came, you will return, and you are spirit. We are all spirit, and back we will go. And that's the biggest takeaway message for me that I've learned, that we never, ever end, cease to exist. We continue on and on and on. And the people and the loved ones you've been around, the animals, you will be reunited, and you may even reincarnate with them and them in your life. So it's like you have this soul family, and it just keeps growing and growing, and it's all about unconditional love.
So you think that we do reincarnate with some of the same loved ones that we have in our lives now, again and again?
Absolutely, absolutely. And one of the things when I learned hypnosis as a psychotherapist, I used to practice past life regression as well as, I would say, progression. You can go into the future with it. Yeah, that's absolutely 100% in my world, in my viewpoint. I believe in reincarnation, and I believe that I believe it's all happening now. That's a weird one to wrap your mind around. That's a whole other talk that we can have someday. But yes, I do believe we have all these different relationships, and that they are with people that we cross into our lives. We'll see them again, and we may be in a different type of relationship with them. They could be our brother, mother, sister, son, nephew, relative, just a good friend, where they might have been somebody else in this life. And it's really an incredible thing. It's the love of our soul that brings us back together. It's that unconditional love. And the animals are the ones that teach us the most about it. But we remember that when we actually transition back to spirit.
What if somebody has a Ouija board that they want to get rid of? For whatever reason, maybe they don't want it anymore, maybe they don't want it in their house, maybe they don't use it. Is there any particular precautions that need to be taken with removing a board from somebody's home?
Well, everybody has some superstitions and beliefs, again. But listen, I'll tell you this. If you guys have a board you don't want, send it to us. Send it to the Talking Board Historical Society. Go to tbhs.org. There's actually an address there you can send it to. It's in Massachusetts. And we will take your board. And if there's a story behind it, share your story with the board. We collect these. We have the Talking Board Traveling Museum. We share those sometimes. We will share the board. We also... John Kozik, who's the treasurer of our group there, he has the Salem Witchboard Museum, and he has a huge collection, and we all support him in that. He might even show your board there so people can understand. The idea of talking board is not to say the board works, doesn't work, or it's evil or good. That's just my perspective. But the talking board is really to say we're neutral about this tool. We want to hear your stories. We want to know how people are affected by it. And also I wanted to say, too, if you guys enjoy the TBHS and what we do, we are a nonprofit organization, a 501c3. Everything we do goes into the events we hold and the gravestones we buy and the programs we put together. So anything you do, you buy any T-shirt from us or buy a board from us or you come to our events, you're helping us get the word out about talking boards. But, yeah, if you have a board you want to give away, we will gladly take it from you.
And I don't know. I'm going to just throw this out there, and you can tell me what you think. I wrote a tongue-in-cheek piece for the Telepath newsletter, which is put out by Paranormal Radio, the Paranormal Radio app. And in it, I was talking about how, you know, everybody was talking about Zozo and all the Zozo stories that were out there. And I said, what if it wasn't Zozo? What if it was actually trying to warn us about 2020? And the Z was a 2, and it was 2020 instead of Zozo, because I've had plenty of Ouija experiences where, you know, it spells out no, or it spells out yes, rather than going to yes or no. You know, it doesn't always seem to be exact in the way that it's putting out the information. So I wrote that kind of tongue-in-cheek, but a lot of people started writing back to me saying how it made so much sense.
Well, you know, what I've learned about this tool, it's like if you pinpoint it and you get a message, you go, that's all that means? You could be wrong. I find this, especially the messages we get, there's many layers, multi-layers to them. You hear it read one way, and then later on you read it again, and you go, oh, wait, that's a word you can have different meanings to it. And so you're right, 2020 looks like 2020. I'm not going to take that away from you. I'm going to say, hey, maybe you're on to something, and maybe you're not.
But it can be used to help you know things that are coming in the future.
Many people use it that way, and they've had some great success with it. What my guides who I work with say, we're not fortune tellers, we're not soothsayers, we're not prophecies or prophecists, but we will sometimes give you information of trends to come. So sometimes people get that. I've had people write to me and tell me all kinds of prophecy they've had. So that might be the way you use the tool. You might find you can use it that way. I find that I'm not successful with that when I try, but when I don't try, it's when I tend to get some things that might be some slightly a projection of stuff to come.
I try to use it to send in my food order to the takeout place. It doesn't work so well. And just the final few moments that we have here, Karen, tell us about the books that people can get by going to midnight.fm.
Wonderful. Yeah, go there and check it out. You could link to my website. We've got The Spirit of Creativity is a book I wrote back in 1997. Didn't come out until 2012. It's sometimes how it works when you publish books. But that one's really, I didn't talk about Ouija in it at all. Don't expect Ouija in there. But that book was something I wrote when I was a psychotherapist, when I was working with people. I helped them tap into their own creativity. I'm not talking about being an artist. I'm talking about learning to co-create your life and become empowered, as I was talking about earlier, to develop your spirituality and simple ways to do that. That book is all about that, trying to really find the greatest self within yourself and bring that out into the world in creative ways. And then the book, The Spirits of Ouija, Four Decades of Communication, is just that. I tell you, my odyssey when I came out with that book was actually 40 years I've been using the board. And when that board came out, everybody wanted to know, well, where'd you get this information from? And the first book I wrote, and we want to hear more about the Ouija board. And that one came out in 2013. It was timely to be able to start talking about these things, because when I was writing back in 1997, they all said, don't talk about the board, you're going to lose your message. And they were absolutely right. I couldn't mention the board back then. Now I can. So that board really helps you learn to use it yourself. I gave you the do's and don'ts. I gave you trials and tribulations, the spirits I spoke with, how to move yourself to these different energy levels I talked about. Where my third book from 2015 is the book that actually, it's called The Spirit of Alchemy, Secret Teachings of the Sacred Union. It actually gets into like evil and talks about Zozo, and it gets into a little bit of the Ouija board, but it's my journey, not so personal, it is some personal stuff, but it's really about how you can evolve yourself even without the board, and how you can start looking at your life in an alchemical way, getting to the dross in your life and transforming that into empowering times, and also into a point where you can start making these connections yourself to your spirit guides, your higher self, and ultimately to source, where you can have direct downloads from the almighty, all that is being. I don't want to even call it a being, the energy field. You can start tapping into that, and I talk about how to do that. That's and also how to get into some of these consciousness levels I was mentioning earlier, too. That book really takes you to the greater levels of using Ouija and beyond. So you can go check this out. It'll take you to my website. You can get all these books on Amazon, too, and also in Kindle form. So, and then join me, please, you guys, on YouTube. We do some fun videos there. I have 220 videos, I think, and it's a lot about the Ouija board or supernatural paranormal stuff. I interview people that are on there, too. And then my website, join my newsletter. You'll find out where we're doing all these cool Ouija stuff and the next place I'm speaking or talking. And the Talking Board Historical Society you'll find on there as well. And then go to tbhs.org, join us there. And, Tim, 3 hours went by really quickly, my friend.
It did. It flew by. But that's all right. I'll just reach out to you on the Ouija board next time I want to talk to you.
I'll talk to your higher self if you give me permission.
Hey, anytime. If you can find it, you can talk to it.
Okay.
All right, Karen. Thank you so much. Have a good night and a great weekend.
Thank you, too. Bye-bye, everybody.
And everybody out there, if you are not going to stick around for Midnight Drive, then have a good weekend. But hopefully you do. Hopefully you join myself and Amy Martin and Jerry King coming up in just a few moments right here on Midnight FM. But if you're going to wait until next Monday, we'll have the lineup revealed for you on Sunday. Until then, have a good night, a good weekend, and enjoy everything.